This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be
us
in
Russia and China.
It's us, the EU. We're in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques. Can we just agree to call it torture?
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hope you're having a great day in Washington, D.C., or wherever in the world you're tuning the show in today. This is Common Sense, the show that cuts through the spin of the anti-American right-wing nuts and brings it to you straight.
During our show, we'll help you, the listener, try and understand the week's events and what we as a nation can do about it. Our job here is not to change your mind, but provide political perspective and act as your voice to power.
In short, we are here to have a discussion and help you replace the spin with common sense. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. How are you? Welcome to Common Sense. The first thing up on the docket today is going to be the Supreme Court Justice resignation, retirement of David Souter. Later on in the show, we're going to be discussing the rebranding of the Republican Party, as well as the Arlen Specter fiasco that's going on. We will also be having a conversation, extended conversation, I'm sure, over Arnold Schwarzenegger's statements regarding he wants a debate over legalization of recreational drugs. We have a couple of guests from AOPA that will be showing up, as well as Angel Flight West. We will be talking about the Miss California fiasco, gay marriage, and a bunch of other things. Chris is my trusted compadre. Chris, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
So far, so good. In the relatively new news, we'll get on this a little bit later on, but the White House military office director has resigned after the fiasco with Air Force One over New York City. So that's kind of called that one last week.
Yeah.
Had to know that was going to happen. So that's looking pretty good. What do you make of this? I got a thing here. Politico.com is reporting that Orrin Hatch is claiming that Sotomayor, Judge Sonia Sotomayor, has made past statements that the Court of Appeals is where policy is made, and he says that's going to be a problem for her if she is nominated to the Supreme Court. I find it amazing that the Republican Party seems to be hell-bent on fighting, insert name here, because they don't know who the nominee is going to be. They have no clue. And an interesting turn of events on this issue, and I'll ask Mike to come in on this one as well. In the interesting turn of events on this issue, Karl Rove made the statement that Barack Obama cannot possibly vet people as well as they did for the Supreme Court, and they spent months and months and months vetting their Supreme Court nominees. This is the same person who nominated their cleaning lady. Gotta love it. Harriet Myers apparently was vetted for months to become a Supreme Court nominee. So Karl Rove has got his two cents in on Fox News.
It's like we were saying before. I think this is a quote of yours, that wherever you're weakest, attack the other side on it.
Yes, it does seem to be quite ironic. I really think that these guys look in the mirror and go, what are we, and how can we just attack that?
I mean, you look back on something like the Harriet Myers, and now that you remind me of it, it's hard to believe that that really happened.
It is, I believe she was George Bush's legal secretary or assistant or something in the White House.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody who really thought she was a qualified candidate.
If I remember, even the Republicans came out against her. That was pretty bad. But Carver wants us to make sure that we nominate someone of at least Harriet Myers' stature.
Sure, do a good job.
I'm sure that President Obama is getting right on Carver's advice there. I just find it very interesting that the although not surprising.
Yeah. I would argue that Karl Rove is right. I mean, Obama can't possibly find someone, you know, as great and wonderful as they did, because their entire policy was stack the deck. It wasn't necessarily meant to be something that's fair. It was just, hey, do you agree with George W. Bush? Okay, you got the job. And Harriet Myers is a perfect example.
Well, I'm just glad that debacle didn't go through. I think it's interesting because we're seeing, first of all, the statement that Orrin Hatch has a problem with Sotomayor is that the appellate court, the Court of Appeals, is where policy is made, is the statement. I don't know. Is that really a false statement? Is it not the role of the Court of Appeals to clarify the law in the realm of its constitutionality and therefore, in effect, make policy? I mean, Roe v. Wade was making policy. It seems to me that the term activist judge is whenever they do something that one side doesn't agree with, then it's an activist judge. They have no problem with the judge being activist and carving out new constitutional or unconstitutional provisions allowing wiretapping at will. They have no problem with that level of activism. But they do have an issue with any activism that's actually giving people more rights or clarifying or quantifying those rights. And I find that quite interesting, to say the least.
Right.
It does seem to be an issue. For those of you who are listening today on Twitter, if you're following us on Twitter, I don't know if they're up or not. I believe Twitter is currently down. They've been down for a good deal of the afternoon. Some of it seems to be coming up, but it's intermittent at best.
I think they called a couple of hours off, so we should, you know.
Well, we're getting something's coming in on Twitter. I just got a comment right here from Sepler, who says, why are we still listening to Rove and Cheney? Aren't we encouraging them? I'd argue that we're really not listening to them. I'm kind of
talking
to them.
We're not listening to them. They just won't go away. Cheney literally won't go away. He's right, you know, in Virginia.
What he's saying is that, you know, with the very fact that we're discussing it, we are in effect listening to some extent. It doesn't mean that we agree, but sometimes certain people, well, Rush Limbaugh, for example, we talk about him a lot, and then we try and say at the same time he's irrelevant. But, you know, if you're talking about a person that gives them some level of credibility right there.
I don't know that I would actually say that Rush is irrelevant. I think that
they're still trying to control the message. They're still trying to steer the GOP agenda.
I think they're trying to find their message is what they're trying to do.
Oh, no, the rest of them, their little minions are trying to find it because they are failing miserably, but they're trying.
Yeah, they're kind of walking around like a fish on the deck at the moment. But, you know, this is what political parties do. You know, they release their talking points. They try to control the message. I don't think that's more of a Republican thing than a Democratic thing.
No, but the part of the Democratic Party this week is clearly being played by the Republicans, because this is usually our job to screw things up this bad. Did I just say the Democratic Party is a bunch of screw-ups? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
We are. If there's a way to lose an election, we will find it.
Hey,
then.
This is an interesting...
Don't sit too close to me. God is going to strike you dead.
Interesting news came out today. Kind of a good news, bad news thing. The economy lost 539,000 jobs in April.
Ouch.
Which is horrible if you're one of those 539,000.
Of the people who lost their jobs in January, February, March. Yeah.
Well, in the big picture, I think it's great news because the level of job loss is slowing down significantly. That number was over 700,000.
I can't help but think how bad that is when we have to celebrate. I know what you're saying. Yeah. But when we have to celebrate the loss. The same thing came out with the housing market, that they were trying to put a positive spin on it, and they said that for I think the statistics were for last month, whenever they last collected, that the year-to-year, you know, over the course of year, the month-to-month loss was still significant, but it wasn't a new record loss. So that was the good part of that news.
Well, and at this point, I think when the economy is as bad as it is, you kind of grab on to whatever you can grab onto.
Well, a slowdown of the descent is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely positive.
It's horrible that we're losing this much, and we're going to lose more. We're going to probably lose another couple of million jobs.
Oh, if it's just slowing down, definitely. But I think you had a good analogy earlier. It's like, you know, the train turning the track. You're still going to keep going in the same direction, but at least you can see that. Or maybe you're on a roller coaster. You're at the last car. You may be still going down, but you know that there's signs of it going up. It's not going down at the same rate.
You know, I think that part of the issue going on in Washington right now is this, and we can touch upon this briefly, the this is the issue of where the Republican Party just feels the need to oppose anything and everything that they possibly can. And you know, a slight look into this was seen when Arlen Specter pulled his little shenanigans this weekend of supporting Norm Coleman, and I think he's since kind of retreated from that a little bit. He got spanked around because he lost.
Arlen Specter was supporting Norm Coleman?
Yeah, Arlen Specter, who switched from Republican to Democrat. After he switches, he tells people that he thinks that the court should go ahead and seat Norm Coleman, which no one is saying that now. I mean, there's no one who thinks that that's even possible.
He's saying that as a Democrat.
Well,
he was a little confused, you know,
had a senior moment. But doesn't that kind of, and yeah. His statement, and I'm quoting this off of MSNBC's story. He says here he says, "I forgot what team I was on."
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Senility is setting in. Come on, the man had brain cancer, and we have to give him a little bit of a learning curve here. He spent a couple decades being a Republican and fighting for a Republican agenda, and then, you know, within, a day or two, we're expecting him to be all, you know, full-fledged Democrats. He actually has supported Democratic agendas and positions for some of his votes and whatnot, which is why the Republicans, you know, are kind of almost, it seems, happy to be rid of him. But he can't completely embrace, you know, some of the friendships and loyalties that he has of the past. And, I mean, I just kind of chalk that up to the guy is old, but...
This is my problem. And this is, you know... This is a really, and let's have this conversation because Mike was in with my campaign for state assembly. And when I was running for state assembly back in California, it was, I was running against an individual. It was the 38th assembly district seat, primarily held by a Republican. So the only person who was going to really have a shot at that seat was a moderate Democrat at best.
Right.
And even then, it would have been an outside shot. The registration is completely upside down. It's 38% registration.
You would have to be a conservative Democrat for that district.
And so I go out for the seat. And my opponent, you know, God love her, but she was a liberal Democrat. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. I think she would say proudly that she was.
Right.
And
I don't think she would argue with you on that point.
The party itself geared up to get behind her. Out of loyalty to her for what she's done to the party. Isn't this what is wrong with politics? When we put the party before the people and we put, you know, and I say this across the board because now the Democrats have got a liberal Democrat and a conservative Republican. They're both running against Specter. So Specter is going to be challenged in the primary anyway.
We don't know what's going to pan out. We don't know what's going to pan out. In Pennsylvania, this is kind of premature to say.
No, it's not. This guy's running. He's announced to run. That's not about pay.
They all do, but then they eventually, you know, say, oops, no, whoops.
He's got a funded primary, and right now he's running.
Well, to get back to his quote.
But do you think that that is going to continue?
I think it is going to continue. I think that this person is going to stay in. He's going to contest he's going to contest Specter because he wants to win the seat. The problem that we have in our political system right now is that only the extremes.
Win the primaries.
Win the primaries.
Right.
It's because and this is our fault because we don't vote in the primaries.
Yes.
If we did, the moderates would win the primaries, and then we'd have a better representation in the fall.
Right. We wouldn't be able to so much say, as you've heard so often repeated in the media, as well. I have two bad choices here.
Or yeah. The worst of two worlds.
Right. We've had a big populist movement recently. But, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of a novel incident. There was another thing I wanted to say as far as you're quoting Arlen Specter. He said he forgot for a moment what team he's on. And I'm sorry, but, you know, American team? Are you going to strictly carry the party line here? It's kind of troubling to watch when politicians want to, you know, say what they're supposed to say or what their team, their party, as opposed to, you know, what they really feel is in the best interest of the constituents.
To answer your question, yes, they are going to just do the party line.
Which, you know, serve me? Does the party line serve me as a individual living in his district? Maybe, maybe not.
It doesn't. It doesn't serve you. It happens too often that the party line is what is the problem because it doesn't work.
I mean, I admit
you're right. That's why we need a two-party system because you know one party with one agenda doesn't help the country. And the reason that I actually asked the question in the beginning was because I was thinking back to Obama and Hillary when she kept going and she had money. Well, she went into debt for it, but so we don't really know if the other guy is going to stay in the race against Specter.
Well, you never know, but I mean, we have to go by what we know right now, which is that he's got money and he's committed to going against him. And I'm not going to speculate as to whether he may drop out down the road. It's interesting what happened behind the scenes here though, is that supposedly, they were clear in the field, for Specter on the Democratic side.
Oh, were they?
And then
I think they were until he opened up his mouth and inserted his foot in the worst way possible.
My understanding of it is that someone forgot to send a memo to Pennsylvania.
You can hang out with Joe Biden there.
Yeah, there were a couple of people in Pennsylvania who apparently were not in on the whole gag, that they were supposed to be clearing the way for Mr. Specter to come over.
Oh, really? Do you think that Specter, being a Republican for so long, does his name pull enough weight? You know, often, and this is another problem I have with the system, if people recognize the name enough, they'll just vote for that name because they recognize it on the ballot. But does his name pull enough weight to where he moves over and it goes to a vote again where he'll be able to carry the Democrats?
I think, well, the question is whether or not he win the primary.
Yes. Will he lose the primary or will he?
I don't know. I don't know because the general public doesn't vote in the primary.
This
generally
is true.
Speaking,
that's the big issue.
So what you have is
the
radicals.
The general public issue, and then you don't have the same things with Lieberman when he went independent.
Yeah,
so he's got to win his primary.
He's got to win his primary. That's where he's going to get taken out is in the primary.
Well,
I don't think the Republicans have anyone that can beat him.
He thinks he can do it.
Well, I don't agree with that. I don't think he thinks he can do it as a Democrat. I think he knows he can't as a Republican. The Republican Party is so. Is so ticked off that
did he get that much ire from fellow Republicans that he wouldn't after that kind of tenure? I mean, you don't often see incumbents lose, much less somebody with a name like that.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
It's very surprising.
It's going to be very interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But what I'm trying to get at here is, you know, the Norm Coleman thing. Norm Coleman needs to get the hell out of this race. I mean, he's not in the race anymore. The only one who
throw in the towel.
The only one who thinks he's still in the race is him, apparently. The GOP, once again, putting party politics ahead of the country again, is happy with just keeping that seat vacant for as long as they possibly can.
Well, is that what's really going on? Does he really think he can win? Or is he just doing the party's bidding by, you know, throwing the anchor out into the sand, you know?
He's doing the party's bidding. I mean, there's no one here thinks that that there's an issue here. So as far as he's going to get it, you know, actually win the seat. It's interesting because when Norm Coleman was ahead, he was calling for
Al Franken
to get out.
Right.
For the sake of the people.
I remember that.
For the sake of the
Step
people.
Step aside for the sake of the people.
Excellent. And now it's fight. Let's go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
I have to stand for principle.
Well, what I think is going to happen here, there's a little bit of rumor, some legal shenanigans going on, that the Democratic Party may ask the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota to compel the governor to seat the senator, which would then preempt essentially the U.S. Supreme Court, because they would have to get a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court to stop it.
Wow.
And this is it's very interesting. The Republican Party wants to go to the Supreme Court over a states' rights issue, saying that the federal government should trump the states' rights. The whole world standing upside down on its head right now. And so I think that, you know, but what I want to get back to here, and what I'm trying to bring up, is that this is a systematic issue. It does happen on the Democratic side and the Republican side. And I'm here to tell you, I'll tick off my Democratic friends now. Democrats play this party politics nonsense just as much, if not more, than everyone else. I mean, these guys, what they do in some states is they will say, we're going to win this many seats, and that's it. And the rest of the seats, we're going to just let go. And so we're not going to even try to represent the people in those areas.
It's kind of like a business investment, I suppose. You're going to look at your best prospects and concentrate on that.
Yes, but at the same point, when you knowingly don't support people that are out there, you know, putting up the good fight, at least advancing
the
message.
We were victims of that to some degree.
We were the victims of this. And I'm still licking my wounds, damn it.
I see.
but it happens on all levels. Look at, I mean, Barack Obama was the outsider candidate who really let the establishment have it. I have a sneaky suspicion that had he gone down in a ball of flames, had he just, let's say the Reverend Wright thing would have just taken him out cold.
Right.
I think right now it'd be Barack who.
How could you say that he's the outsider? Because he
Are you kidding me?
Oh, I definitely.
Are you kidding me?
He was endorsed by Oprah Winfrey. Come on.
Oprah Winfrey, yes, who's a known political scholar.
Of the Democrats.
It doesn't matter. You don't necessarily have to, you know, be a political scholar to succeed in politics. Everyone knows that. There's a lot about money.
He had no establishment support whatsoever.
Would you really call him the party's candidate? I mean, before he started to take the lead. And that's another point I'd make. Look at how long it took the media to acknowledge that. After, you know, for example, in Texas, remember in the media called the Hillary one, that everybody knew that Texas had the two-part system with the help me out here.
With the caucuses and the primary.
Exactly.
And he actually won it.
He won it, and everybody knew that, but it's not how it was reported. And it was obvious, and they had – he was kind of the chosen one for this.
Well, I think the proof of that is that, you know, when they were still saying that Hillary Clinton was in the race.
Yes. It was obviously,
she had lost 11 primaries in a row. I don't care who you are. Now, God love Hillary Clinton, but I don't care who you are. If you lose 11 primaries in a row, you're toast.
And don't dismiss my girl, man. I love her.
Not disrespecting her. It's plain. This is all common sense for a reason. It's designed to cut through the political spin. That election was over. One could argue, I would almost say it was over in Iowa. But one could argue that it sustained the campaign still went. It was over right after Super Tuesday.
I can say that they did not let go till beyond the very end.
Well, I think what happened was the media created that. The media wanted a fight. They had no interest in having the Democratic side be over that fast. And they did the same thing with John McCain through the election. They kept acting like McCain was in the race.
I would say that Barack Nett built such a grassroots groundswell that he overtook what was, one could argue, would be the anointed, you know, party leader.
Yeah.
He
had to get, you know, Ted Kennedy was kind of the what broke the dike when it came to getting support there. Now, some senators didn't support
Hillary. What
was it?
An interesting thing to discuss. Was it the support that broke, or was it he had so much support behind him that people felt they needed to get on board to the winning team.
Yeah, that is really one of those which came first, the chicken or the egg things, because he had to really prove his stones.
Because I remember there was a lot of, you know, a lot of endorsements came late. A lot of people didn't want to stick their neck out.
Oh, those people that endorsed late just really didn't endorse. I mean, they kind of came in when they wanted to. We're going to open the phone lines up here, by the way. You can call in the show live, 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, anywhere in the world. You can also send an at reply, although it's not working, by the way. The at replies are not coming through. We are getting some of the ones that are mentioning my name in the show. So if you're using the feed at getcommonsenseradio.com/feeds.html, if you are using that to talk to the show, we are able to see it. This is a Twitter problem. It's not our problem. The APIs are down, but it is popping up because it's showing up in the searches. So once again, that's getcommonsenseradio.com/feeds.html. If you use that Twitter panel, it is getting through to the show. You can also call in at 888-228-4494. There's my mandatory
break. And please do call in. We like to hear from you.
Yeah, you guys are being all shy on Twitter. I got paid.
Yeah, you are.
They're just hilarious.
It's nice to get people emailing in and whatnot, but there's nothing like hearing from you in person. So do call.
And we're going to be talking to some guests here shortly about general aviation. And the reason that I've got so many people coming on is we talked about this briefly last week. And this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart because I'm a pilot, as is my compadre Mike. We do fly small aircraft, and the ongoing idea about small aircraft is that it's run by millionaires who have more money than brains. Now, granted, we might have purchased the aircraft when we had less brains, but we are far from millionaires.
I think it's the larger problem is where you want to target a group of people, so you paint them in a bad light. This is a bunch of wealthy people that are doing this as a sport hobby, and we should really push them out of the way or tax them more because it's okay to do so, is this action truly justified?
Yeah, and I think that what's happening right now is that you have several competing interests going on, and people need to understand what's happening here. You have several competing interests going on in the aviation industry, and the general aviation, which is small aircraft, most people don't see a need for. They don't realize what it's all about, what GA is all about. And these small aircraft do many things, such as fly people in and out of small airports. Every pilot, I don't care if you are flying the space shuttle or you're going to go fly a tin can, has to start with flying a Cessna, basically.
Yeah.
A Cessna
Piper.
That's a
good point, too. We need to keep in mind that this is not just for sports and recreation, that these are the people that are going to become the pilots of tomorrow as far as the commercial airlines that we all fly. We've also got to think about the fact that the government, a lot of you may know that in the past, a large, if not most, pilots came from the military. The military has scaled back their programs, and they've also upped their retention. So they're not going to be training people for free and handing them over to the civilian sector. We're going to be doing more and more pilot training in the civilian world for future commercial carriers, such as Southwest or even a package carrier, FedEx, UPS, whatnot. So it's a necessity. It's not something that we want to close down. It's not something that we want to give the city authority over instead of the FAA, where a city might want to encroach on the airport, might want to close it down. There are a lot of problems, and a lot of times now you see them using this faux security threat to clamp down on the airports. And general aviation is really not a significant security threat. That's a completely manufactured argument.
Well, when that plane got stolen up in Canada, it was breaking news, and they actually evacuated.
You could do more damage stealing a truck than Cessna.
they actually evacuated the State House of Wisconsin for a Cessna 172. Now, to tell you guys what we're talking about here, a Cessna 172 weighs about as much as a Honda Civic and carries about as much gasoline as an SUV.
A little less.
In fact, it actually weighs less than a Honda Civic.
It's an aluminum body, single engine aircraft. It's designed for lightweight. It would be the equivalent of evacuating the federal building because somebody stole a car across the street and you're worried about them crashing the car into the building. I mean, it's not Hollywood here. These things don't explode on impact. And it's really fear-mongering.
We're gonna go to a caller right now. Chris is on line two. Chris, come on in. Welcome to the show, Common Sense. What can I do for you?
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello.
This is Chris Nancy from AOPA.
Oh, hey, Chris. How are you? They didn't give me your
ears. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Seth was supposed to give us an introduction and let us know when you were here.
Although
your timing is perfect.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
The Common Sense.
Although we're apparently lacking right now.
It's technical prowess we're lacking, not common sense.
These things happen, I understand.
This is Chris Dancy, the Media Relations Director with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, whose timing is absolutely impeccable. We were just having this conversation. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, well, you know what? Why don't you go ahead and tell the people what the organization is and what you guys do?
Sure. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association is a membership organization. We represent the interests of general aviation. I came in sort of at the end of your conversation, but general aviation is everything except the scheduled airlines and the military. So it's a really broad organization. We have 415,000 members, roughly 70% of the U.S. pilot population. And we provide our members with a bunch of services, not the least of which is advocating on their behalf at every level of government on issues ranging from keeping airports open to security measures that the federal government tries to instigate to how the FAA gets paid for.
Well, that's really cool. And I myself am a AOPA member, as is Mike.
Yes.
That's actually how we knew to give you guys a call and have you come on the show today, because I think it's important that people see there's more than one side of general aviation. And when you hear about the State House of Wisconsin being evacuated for an aircraft that was stolen, that NORAD apparently had already determined was not a threat at all because it was a Cessna 172. And we were discussing this in the preparation for the show, that, you know, a lot of the media is just, they're doing the best they can with the information they have. And so if you hear stolen aircraft, oh my God, this is a threat. Can you speak a little bit about what threats, you know, what is the threat? Am I safer inside a building or than outside? If someone, in the worst case scenario, say someone did have a hostile intent, wouldn't I be safer inside a building from a small aircraft than I would outside?
That would certainly seem to be the case. I mean, the planes just, they don't make good weapons. As you were saying, as I came on the line, these planes, the plane in question, fully loaded, has a maximum gross takeoff weight of 2,500 pounds. That's assuming that you fill every seat and you fill the tanks full and put stuff in the luggage area. It weighs less than a Honda Civic weighs empty. Honda Civic curb weight is higher than that. It travels at 110, 120 miles an hour in general. And in most places, the structure is just basic aluminum. It's no stronger than a Coke can. It's designed to be light. So it lacks the speed. It lacks the kinetic energy to really do much damage. Back right after the September 11th attacks, There was an incident in Tampa where a young man who apparently was bent on suicide flew into the Bank of America building and basically killed himself and damaged one office. Even in the just a couple of years ago, when Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle misjudged a turn and struck a building in New York, the language that the National Transportation Safety Board used in their update said that the plane bounced off the building. They just, as a weapon, you have much better choices on the ground than you do in the air.
And you know, general aviation does a lot of good things for the country, and I think that's really what I'm trying to get at here, is that they don't make good weapons. They're not good for use in some type of overt terrorist attack.
I think it'd be good to make the point that these planes have we've tried to use them as weapons before in Vietnam and on the California coast during World War II, and they didn't really even work when they tried to use them as such. I mean, the best military you can get out of one of these planes is as a spotter.
And I
even the Transportation Security Administration recognizes in their guidelines for general aviation airport security the language they use, it says that general aviation pilots and aircraft in and of themselves do not pose a threat.
That's an interesting point.
They have other concerns that we could spend the next four shows talking about, but the pilots and the planes they fly themselves in general aviation are not considered a threat. General aviation, there are a lot of us who fly purely for the enjoyment of it, but there are a lot of people who, having learned to fly, now use airplanes, either the ones they rent or if they're fortunate enough to be in a position to own one, in support of their business. These are small business owners who expand their territory and their reach by flying to meet with customers. And then as you move on up, you get to business, larger businesses that might use turboprops or jets. And again, they value their employees' time, so using general aviation and flying point to point rather than from big airport to big airport and then driving an hour and a half, they use these planes in support of their business. And interestingly, there are a number of studies that have been done by the National Business Aviation Association, the National Air Transport Association. 86% of the time, the people on board those planes are not executives. They're technicians, they're salespeople,
it's just for efficiency.
They're carrying parts. So, the business jet is really an effective business tool for companies that use them.
And I'm getting a question from Twitter, a technical question, regarding the people who are listening to this through the video feed. The video feed is a raw feed of the show. If you are listening to this through the video feed, you will not hear the caller. So you need to go to either on air or go to the website that is on the bottom of your screen, and you will hear the caller. That's a raw feed you're getting from the station. Getting back to this, the general aviation serves a lot of good. I mean, I myself ran an air rescue operation after Hurricane Katrina, and I was one of countless pilots that was down there. This is actually a normal thing. We're going to have a guest on here shortly from Angel Flight to talk about what they do. Could you talk a little bit about, I know that AOP is running this GA Serves America program. Could you talk a little bit about what the general aviation does and how it affects people? And also, could you touch upon briefly when we talk, I'll come back to that. I want to come back to security restrictions and what that does to local economies when that happens. But first, if you could speak about how general aviation serves the country in various ways. I think it's important for people to understand the other side of this.
Sure. Well, we talked a little bit about business, and that's obviously a big part of it. General aviation accounts for $150 billion with a B dollars in economic activity in this country every year, 1.2 million jobs. So it has a big economic effect, but there is so much more that general aviation does. The United States is, I think, the world's second largest producer of rice. 95% of the rice crop is planted by air. There are organizations like the one you mentioned, Angel Flight, and various other organizations around the country that provide medical transport for patients, usually in more rural areas, who have medical needs beyond their local medical community's ability to deal with. And there are pilots who donate their time, their aircraft, pay for the fuel to take these patients and fly them to the facilities they need to. Angel Flight, Grace Flight, there are a number of them around the country. There's a new group that's cropping up. And you may have seen, I know NBC has done something, and there have been articles in the newspaper that do animal rescue, that take dogs that are have reached the end of their time period in a in a county kennel or something, and are in danger of being euthanized, and fly them to new homes in other states. Again, the pilots donate their time, donate their aircraft. What else? Medevac is general aviation. Law enforcement is general aviation. Crop dusting is general aviation. If we didn't have crop dusters, or aerial applicators, as they prefer to be called, crop yield in the United States would drop by something like 50%. So it's just a huge field, and it does so much good for the country. It is so much more than people going up and just flying around on a pretty Saturday afternoon.
A little more than jet setting and sightseeing, yes.
And now we were talking earlier about restrictions and stuff that have happened to general aviation after 9/11, and you don't have to follow me down this bunny trail, but I frankly refer to it as security theater, where we're doing things to make people feel secure, but it's not actually creating any level of realistic security.
But it is costing a lot of money and a lot of hardship.
And I think that's the thing. And a lot of pilots feel this. I'm sure AOPA hears about this, because you guys represent these people that wander into restricted airspace and get blown off course. And to your knowledge, has any infraction of airspace, and there's been countless of them, has any infraction of airspace, to your knowledge, actually the interception actually resulted in stopping a terrorist attack or some type of untoward activity towards our government? Or is it primarily just people who, you know, goofed up and weren't watching their GPS or didn't tune in their instruments properly or just got lost?
With the exception of one that I've heard about in the Washington, D.C. area, all of them have been accidental. Either someone did not pay attention to the FAA notices to airmen that advised them about these temporary flight restrictions, or they got blown off course slightly. The one that I know about was in no way terrorist related, but there was someone in the Washington, D.C. area who decided deliberately to challenge the airspace restrictions in the Washington, D.C. area.
Because this is what you want to do with a small airplane, is challenge an F-16.
There's always going to be that one.
Yeah, not everybody makes wise decisions, and let's just leave it at that. But
right.
But otherwise, all of them that I'm aware of, I am not aware of any that have ever been shown to have any terrorist or criminal intent.
And that's a very important point. Chris, you had something?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say, you know, whether we, overprotect, as I think the point is being made, with air restrictions, you know, it would be short-sighted of the United States to believe that, you know, terrorists are not trying to plot us, but, you know, they are going to infiltrate or try to infiltrate us in different ways and, you know, not just, you know, have the genius idea to, hey, let me go fly a plane into another building. And that's already been tried and it worked, you know, but we've learned from that. And so now it doesn't serve anyone, you know, in real terms, to have a policy based out of fear.
To focus and just on aircraft.
Well, I think the point is that even when they chose to use a weapon, and I don't want to really hang up on that, but even when they chose to use weapons, they chose aircraft that were operating under commercial, they were commercial aircraft.
Aircraft that were capable of inflicting damage.
And well, most importantly, I think this is what my personal problem with this whole thing is that the aircraft that were involved in this event were under a flight plan, were under positive control of the FAA, under air traffic control, which is what the term is, positive control. They were under the most restrictive measures you could have that exist right now, exist to this day. They were under the most restrictive measures, and this still occurred. When you hear congressmen, and I'm going to use the term mouth off, about general aviation, what they will tell you is these guys don't have to file flight plans. They can come in and out. Nobody knows who they are. They can do whatever they want. And that's all true. But the point is that when they couldn't, when they had to file flight plans, when we did know who they were, when we did have everything under control, this occurred. So to say that one will somehow protect the other is complete political fiat.
We've heard plenty of comments.
It's
made in ignorance.
Overkill.
Example, was there not something that said that the cockpit of every small aircraft should be closed off? And
yeah, some idiot actually came up with that idea.
Don't really have a separate cockpit. There's one. Yeah, there's one single space, for lack of a better term, when you open the door of a small aircraft.
So my beef here is not really with a news media who's uneducated. You know, hey, a stolen aircraft coming over state buildings is news. That's fair news. But
absolutely,
there is education taking place because the law enforcement officers that evacuated that building should not have had any need to do so.
No, that should not.
Causing panic and relating that panic to small aircraft, which then creates more bad media for people with small aircraft. And more importantly, and I think this is a big point here, it detracts from, A, the good things that happen to general aviation, and it detracts our attention from legitimate threats.
And
it could really be a problem.
And it hurts people with no benefits. No, nothing good to
me. When the President of the United States travels in this country, my understanding, this was before I was flying, there was a 10-mile flight restriction, and Chris can correct me if I'm wrong. There was a 10-mile flight.
It was 5-mile radius, 5,000 feet altitude.
Okay, that's what it was prior to 9/11. Now, after 9/11, that restriction is what?
It's a two-tier safety measure. There's a 10-mile radius no-fly zone that extends to 18,000 feet, and then from the 10-mile out to 30-mile, there's a somewhat less restrictive area where you have to be, as pilots refer to it, squawking and talking. You have to be in radio communications with air traffic control. You have to have a specific code that identifies your particular aircraft, and you have to be on a flight plan. So we're talking nautical miles. So in actual fact, it's about a 70-mile diameter ring of restricted airspace around the president.
And I'm in no way, shape, or form trying to second guess what the Secret Service is doing. I mean, they have a very, very tough job. What I'm really doing is making the point that these restrictions then shut down effectively shut down airports in that ring to varying degrees, thereby stopping flight schools, stopping general aviation from going out. Because the real kicker of all this is that in most of these cases, scheduled commercial air flights, you know, the ones that created the problem in the first place, mm-hmm. can still go through at will in most cases. And this is what is so maddening when you're dealing with general aviation. What happens in Southern California and in South Florida, we have what I call the Mickey Mouse TFRs.
They announced temporary flight restrictions that are really permanent. And they're 3,000 feet, 3 miles around Disneyland. I'm here to tell you, there's nothing. If I was flying a kite at 3,100 feet and decided I want to drop it onto Mickey's Playhouse, it's going to be on Mickey's Playhouse. So the only purpose of these things is not to prevent some kind of attack, but it's to provide reserved airspace for Disney, who doesn't want banner towers flying their banner towing stuff around Disneyland. That's what it's really all about. They've been lobbying to have restricted airspace for years.
It's the using of 9/11.
But they use 9/11 to do it. And so who gets affected by these flight restrictions?
And actually,
you're flying out of the airport and you're going and you transition that airspace, you have to now fly around it.
And that's what happened in EMS after 9/11. There were rules, and you know, I was an EMT running on a volunteer squad. There were rules where we couldn't keep our truck, meaning our ambulance, open, or you know, someone had to be with it at all times because everyone was afraid that someone was going to come steal an ambulance and then plow it into a hospital or, God forbid, you know, anywhere else because people trust ambulances. But the reality of that, you know, was that ambulances don't exactly say, hey, steal me. We don't leave the ambulances. And those rules still exist to this day. You know,
well, we're gonna transition here from the threat category and me being personally ticked off about this, and we're gonna transition over to the positive things that general aviation does. Chris Dancy with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, thank you very much for joining us on the air.
Thank you.
I greatly appreciate it.
You're really welcome. I'm glad to do it.
We're going to transition over to Sherry Cimarus, who is with Angel Flight West. Now, I have the distinct honor of being a member of Angel Flight West, and I encourage everyone to join. And if you cannot join, I encourage everyone to donate to this cause any way you can, whether you're a pilot or if it's just money, whatever you can do, because this is an organization that provides free transportation via air to sick children, and in some cases terminally ill children. And provides that care free of charge. It's donated by the pilots. The aircraft are donated. The fuel is donated. The pilot's time is donated. And these are kids who normally would not be able to get this type of care. They bring the parents of family members or friends and the child themselves. And Sherry, are you with us?
I am.
There you are.
Hello, Sherry.
I can hear you just fine. Could you tell the people here about Angel Flight West and your interaction with general aviation, how that all came about and what it all does?
Sure, I will.
Sure.
Angel Flight West, like the other Angel Flight organizations across the country, arranges free air transportation for people going to and from medical treatment when they can't afford to do so on their own, or other situations. Somebody that might have a bone marrow transplant and they have a compromised immune system. They can't fly commercially because of the recirculated air. And as Jim mentioned, these flights are all done with the generosity and the heart of general aviation pilots who fly their own or rented airplanes and completely at their own cost. There is never a charge to a provider or to a patient to get that transportation. We do a variety of different types of costs. Most of our flights are medical flights. People going to and from cancer treatment, kidney disease, heart disease. About 30% to 40% of our flights are for children. And in addition to our regular medical flights, we do compassion flights, taking people to visit terminally ill family members. We do domestic violence relocations. We fly blood and organs. And something that is relatively new for us is we fly in support of the United States military in flying wounded warriors from Iraq or Afghanistan and or their family members in situations where they do not get government transportation.
That's quite interesting, and I know that as I was saying earlier, you know, I participated with countless other
pilots after Hurricane Katrina. Is that something that Angel Flight usually is prepared for or takes or is involved in when it comes to not just the sick children aspect, but the emergency response aspect of being able to serve the community on short notice and possibly being able to get in and out of smaller airfields when, you know, take Los Angeles. You're in Southern California. Take Los Angeles, for example. The San Fernando Valley has several airports. Large airplanes can get in there, but there's many airports throughout the country that large airplanes cannot, and only small aircraft can, that people can go to in the event of a disaster. Is this something that Angel Flight also is prepared for?
Yeah, absolutely. Following the events of 9/11, Angel Flight pilots, as all general aviation pilots were, they were clamoring to help. And at that time, we didn't have any... we didn't have a formal system in which to get our pilots up and going. So about a year or so after that, we started doing that, putting together some programs so that our pilots would be ready. They would be informed when an event came up. And when Katrina came around, that had not, you know, been fully formed. However, the Angel Flight organizations that were a part of at what was called at the time Angel Flight America did fly nearly 4,000 passengers in a little over 2,000 flights. And they did that solely by sort of knocking on doors that were already burdened to get the word out that our Angel Flight pilots were there to help. Since that time, we have done a lot of outreach to disaster relief organizations, including the American Red Cross, military organizations, local law enforcement department. And so we feel at this point that we are very well prepared in the event of a disaster, be it a natural disaster such as the wildfires that are taking place in Santa Barbara right now, or in the event of a any kind of a terrorist event or any other national event where general aviation pilots could be abused.
Well, that is very good. I'm glad that people can hear this because we've been doing an entire segment for the past 20 minutes or so on general aviation, because it's important for people to understand that general aviation is under attack right now. It's been under attack for several years by several different entities, some of which are moneyed special interests in Washington, D.C., some of which are congressmen or other elected officials willing to grandstand on people's ignorance. And so what we're trying to do here, this particular section of the show, is to educate people on what general aviation does and how it serves this country and how it does some wonderful things for this country. I think it's important for people to understand that when you hear small airplanes or the airports or something comes up for airport funding on how small aircraft serve the community. And I greatly appreciate you coming on the air. I'm going to go ahead and give everyone your website, which is angelflightwest.org. That's angelflightwest.org. And I thank you, Sherry, for coming on the show real quick. I appreciate it. And hopefully people can go to your website and see a little more. And if you can, this is a good organization. It's one of these charitable organizations. It's a really good one. I'm proud to be a member of them myself. You can donate there if you're a pilot and you're so happy listening in the California area. Angel Flight West will help you in California, but it's also other states as well. Angel Flight in general is available throughout the entire United States, and you can certainly go there and see more about what they do and see some of the stories of the children and other people they've helped. That is a really good thing there, Mike, what these guys do, and I think it's pretty
definitely.
Pretty
and it's also not very well known, so it's good to get these things out so the public understands that general aviation is a conglomerate of different businesses and different entities. It's not just what you typically see on Hollywood or you know what you might think of right off the bat.
1-888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. We are going to head on over to our buddy Gotta Laugh with today's Tweet Spot.
Welcome to my Tweet Spot. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. Okay, let's see who's out there tweeting. What's that? Sarah Palin on Twitter? Oh, say it ain't so, you betcha too also. What do you say, Sarah? AP gravely misquoted my staff, saying I changed my mind on the stimulus package. Oh, poor Sarah. But wait, Sarah's back, this time with a more upbeat tweet. Just signed HB2 birth certificate for stillbirth. Thankful Alaskans respect sanctity of life. Many thanks. Thanks, but no thanks, Caribou Barbie. Now, here are some sympathetic responses from her suck-ups, her loyal tweeters. First one, if you've ever lost a baby carried for 9 months, you'll know. Okay, but in my humble opinion, Sarah Dearest is taking incremental steps against Roe v. Wade. By the way, the CDC defines spontaneous fetal death, spontaneous abortion, stillbirth, or miscarriage to mean the expulsion or extraction of a product of human conception resulting in anything other than a live birth, and which is not an induced termination of pregnancy, also known as an induced abortion. But what do they know? Next one. Keeping an interested eye on my distant cousin, Sarah Palin. Our future may depend on her. Wow. Our future depends on Palin? The end is near, everyone. Okay, now here's one from our side. Stop the presses. Sarah Palin, that inconsequential speck in the cold, cold wilderness, is on Twitter. What a hack! On that note, we'll call it a wrap. I'd like to keep my tweet spot. Tweet. See you later, Tweety Pies. Take it away, Jim.
Well, that is awesome. Sarah Palin on Twitter. That is great. I don't know what to say. At a loss.
Do you say to that?
What do you, Chris? You take this because I don't know what to say.
Oh, Sarah Palin. I just. There's, a couple states already that want to secede from the country because of Obama. I say we just send them there because apparently, you know, the air is cold enough that your brain just completely freezes and all coherent thoughts completely cease.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous statement that we have heard often is the fake secession movement.
No, the fake secession. Yeah. I'm not that far off. I think we should just let Texas go.
I love it actually when the Republicans sit there and say, oh no,
lost that one there.
All of Obama's stimulus money, you know, we don't want that. And then, you know, they just put up this big front and all of a sudden, oh, well, by the way, yeah, maybe we might want it, but we don't like it.
Oh, no, I like what our governor said here in California. He said, any of you states don't want yours to send over here, California, we'll take it.
That's great. The California is not the only state. There's several states out here on the East Coast that have done the same exact thing.
So let them forgo it and then more for us.
It is interesting. The only states that actually turned it down were states that their governors are running for president. So,
oh, really? I didn't realize that there actually were states that you know paid more than lip service to that sentiment.
Well, I believe the legislatures have gone ahead, but the only governors who came out screaming against it are running for president. Yeah, so it's interesting. More interesting news here on the East Coast, which is New Hampshire has lawmakers passed a bill supporting gay marriage. And as well as Maine is supporting gay marriage. Maine went and put in passed a law, and the governor signed it, adding to the number of states that are.
Iowa already has, has it not?
I already has, it does seem like a good thing to do. So I think that the discussion is clearly going to go on that as far as gay marriage is concerned.
Yeah, it's not only just Hawaii out there by themselves anymore. So,
speaking of gay marriage,
ain't you glad we ain't all California girls?
Soon to be former Miss California, Carrie Prejean certainly wasn't the first person to perform a monumental screw up by putting words to thought, but this particular genius is something else. First, she comes out against gay marriage at the Miss USA pageant, where she was to represent a state embroiled in a heated battle over, you guessed it, gay marriage. To make matters worse, she then goes to Washington, D.C. to trumpet her newfound voice against tolerance and proclaim that she had Christian values. But wait, there's more. Turns out her Christian values didn't stop her from lying her cute little ass off when she told Miss USA officials there were no semi-nude photos of her. Now, you might ask yourself how I know she has a cute little ass. Because there are semi-nude photos of her. When one was produced on TMZ, she then told officials that that was the only one. Turns out, TMZ has three more. The self-proclaimed Christian conservative now claims these topless photos of her in nothing but her panties were taken when she was 17 years old. That's a great role model for your kids there, people.
That is just so awesome that her new defense has been, I was 17 years old. And now, kind of a breaking news on that front, there is still more news coming in that it is possible that she might be pushing a version of the truth that does not quite line up.
Inconsistent with the facts?
It's inconsistent with the facts. A website, and I forgive me, it escapes me right now. One of the many websites that are looking at this is now claiming that they have looked at the article of clothing that she was wearing,
right,
and have determined that that article of clothing was not even manufactured until after the time she turned 18 years old.
Oh, lovely!
Which means that she basically is
she's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't situation here. I mean, if she really was underage, you've got to ask the question, what were you doing that for? And then if she wasn't, she's not in line with the requirements of the pageants. Am I right in saying that?
Well, see, that's the whole thing. I had actually called for her to step down after she made this dopey comments that she made regarding gay marriage. And I know that some did not agree with me when I said that. I think that it is an issue it affects so many people. And California is embroiled in the gay marriage issue after the issue was voted down by the voters in a very, very close election back in November. And that kind of rose everything to the top.
Right.
And then for someone who's supposed to be representing the state of California, in a capacity and represent the entire state. And one could argue if asking her the question was fair or not.
Well, I have no problem calling her out on hypocrisy. If she's going to claim to be the good, wholesome conservative that is against that sort of a thing, I don't believe in attacking her for that opinion. But if she, on the other hand, is then going to be doing racy photos on the one hand and then trying to tell us something completely different, I have no problem with calling out that hypocrisy. What I do have a problem with is, you know, hitting her for her opinion, basically, using what is essentially a beauty pageant to make a political statement. So I was wondering, you know, how you felt about that.
Well, I think that it's been long, kind of almost a history of these various events where people look at the Academy Awards. They take that moment.
I love
that
what
moment.
Saturday Night Live does on that, by the way.
they take that moment in the spotlight and they use it. And I guess whether or not that annoys you is probably more dependent upon whether or not you agree with what they're
in
saying.
In this case, it wasn't her that was using it. It was the person who asked her the question.
That was Hilton Perez.
Right.
And he's got a vested interest in the issue. It's an issue that is near and dear to him. I don't know that it's an unfair question to ask where you stand. I think maybe to couch it better would have been, are you capable of representing all Californians as opposed to just whoever you may have a view on? I have an issue
and where I think that where I think that Carrie Prejean there really jumps the shark totally is when invariably a lot of these individuals who oppose gay marriage vehemently enough to lose the Miss USA crown to over their mouth are going, and you can count down the seconds before it comes out, oh, I am a Christian conservative. That, good for you. And I'm really glad you feel the need to tell everyone. Mm. I see this on Twitter every single day. I'm a Christian conservative, and they always feel the need.
Well, what about the other side of that? I'm a gay rights activist. I'm going to throw this in. I'm going to throw this wrench into this pageant.
I don't see many Twitter feeds that say I'm a gay rights activist. I see countless of them Christian conservatives.
That would go unsaid.
Well,
but if that's your
what I'm getting at is that the Christian conservatives, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm not talking about all of them,
right?
But there is a segment of this population that feel the need to wear it on their sleeve as a portable step stool, so they can take higher ground over you. That they are somehow more in tune with the Almighty.
I'll agree with you to the extent where I don't want somebody coming and saying, "Hey, what you're doing is immoral because me and my organization have decided so, and so therefore, you know, you can't do that." On the other hand, I would ask the listeners to think of this if it were flipped. Say one of, you know, these so-called Christian conservatives threw that question at one of these pageant contestants, and she said she supported it, and he held that against her. We wouldn't like that, would we?
I wonder if the same uproar would be there, and I don't know the answer to that question. I think
guarantee you there would be an uproar over attacking somebody over their opinion. Now, you know, whether that's just an opinion or whether that's a complete unfair assessment to have is a matter of, you know, to be argued. But
well, I think that the first of all, the issue when you are dealing with a Miss USA pageant and you are there to represent, I mean, clearly she could have answered the question better.
Yeah, but I mean, she's there to represent California. I agree. And it's not like we don't have a history of pageant contestants with bad answers.
Well, they're known for intelligence. That's their thing.
You know, getting back to it, I think it's a little too easy to say that, well, she's got to represent everybody in California to be. You could take any number of questions, and your answer to that could cast off some portion of the population. Do you support this? Do you support that? I mean, you can't
That's politics.
You can't be all things to everyone unless you're running for office, which I suppose in a manner she's doing. But I don't know, you draw the line versus, you know, what you feel is intolerable at all versus, you know, do you want to attack somebody for an opinion that doesn't agree with yours?
Well, yes, I do. When regardless of who the individual is, when an individual says that they believe it's okay to discriminate against an entire segment of the population,
we'll define discrimination.
I don't have to describe discrimination.
You don't believe in you don't support the state recognition of gay marriage, so that
we need to understand what the actual fight here is. The fight here is over a flipping word. Literally a word. Most people who try to draw the line say they have no problem with gay people in civil unions. They have no problem giving them all the legal rights and protections of being married. They just don't get to call it marriage. Well, that's ridiculous.
That is a good point, but I would also say that a lot of people feel that marriage is not just a state thing. Marriage is kind of a secular or a state recognition of a religious or a cultural event, and that doesn't really represent the perception that most people have.
Well, then there's a separation of church and state in the first place. And what really,
which we don't really ever succeed.
But what really,
that doesn't mean you have to ram every single reference to religion, or, you know, should we not have Christmas as a state holiday because of the separation of church and state? I mean, there are going to be secular references or secular recognition of some things that are religious.
Yes, but not one singular religious view. And that is the kicker.
Well, I mean, Christmas is a holiday. Is that not one singular?
But you get other holidays as well. You get Jewish holidays. You get other things. And the
You know, this is a really hot button issue. I think we should be asking for callers here for some opinions.
Well,
Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us?
Twitter people are twittering away here.
Do you want to sing to the choir? Do you want to say we don't know what we're talking about?
They want to say you don't know what you're talking about. They want to applaud my position. That's what they want to do. 888-228-4494. All our San Francisco callers, come on in, call us in.
Jump on the bandwagon.
In all seriousness, all callers, good or bad. 888-228-4494 is our number. We are getting some people on Twitter. Aphrodite says, Miss California would have been fine without In My Country part of the answer. AAJ78 says she's entitled to her opinion, but don't use the Bible. I think what they're trying to say there is don't use the Bible as an excuse for doing it, which is what she did. I mean, this is the problem. I would argue, because me and you had discussions about this, that your initial defense of her actually held some merit, much to my chagrin. I was not happy with it, but your initial defense of saying, "Well, this is her opinion."
Then she had to go and ruin it for me. There,
she did. She totally screwed it up for you, and she made it very hard on you with these pictures that came out, and then that really put it in a different light, because now she's basically saying that I'm moral, that the reason that I feel this way is because of my moral values. And your moral values told you to remove your pants, remove your shirt, remove your bra, and have pictures of you taken in your underwear.
What's immoral about nudity? It's totally natural.
Yeah, okay. That's not what these guys would tell you. And so to sit there and act as if you have the moral high ground and then do this and then lie about it, not once but twice. And keep in mind, she did not just get on stage and answer a question. She then took that firestorm, put her little butt on an aircraft, went to Washington, D.C., and stood with an anti-gay rights movement.
Right.
To then use her platform as Miss California as a way to push an agenda against gay Americans. At that point, you're done. Why this girl still is Miss California is beyond me.
I know enough about how that works, whether, you know, how the pageant handles that, how you become disqualified, or if you become, you know, that's their decision to make.
By the way, Aphrodite tells me to correct you and say that people can decide not to participate in Christmas.
People can decide not to.
People do decide not to participate in Christmas.
And so therefore, this
I don't
is not
see
recognizing
Christmas
it.
Under my tree, darn it.
If I go to work, nobody's there. It's kind of hard to participate.
That's
although I do appreciate the comment and the feedback. And I would say that we do see grandstanding on both sides. I mean, I hear a lot of you know, and I agree with a lot of it, that when somebody tries to take the religious high ground and tries to be the moral authority, that, you know, we don't really need that. But then again, I've heard a lot on the other side of agree with me or you're against, you know, people's civil rights, agree with me, or there's something wrong with you as well.
Well, at some point there is a line, because the big question I have is, why does anybody care?
Well,
I mean, the
cares,
same arguments are being made.
A bad radio program. People care a lot.
Touche. The same argument that is being made against gay marriage is the same argument that was made against interracial marriage in the 60s. It's a very difficult decision for some people, but there's an entire segment of the population decides to inject themselves into this issue that doesn't affect them. I myself am not homosexual, and I don't personally have a dog in this hunt. And so my thing is, if a group of individuals want a particular right that doesn't adversely affect me, then who am I to stop them from having it? Now, that's a separate issue. That's a whole separate discussion from whether or not someone should be using their position as Miss California to promote something that is especially a very hotbed issue. I would go this far. I would say that she would could have said what she said on TV, and in and of itself, it was an insensitive thing to say. It was a dumb thing to say. It was politically moronic. But she could have walked away from it at that moment.
Well, I think that people's voices will be heard on this issue as far as how this is being decided in states as it's voted upon. And we did have that vote recently in California. It was called Proposition 8. It was very, very hotly contended. But Proposition 8 was an anti-gay marriage proposition. It did pass, although by a thin margin. And, you know, back to the Miss California representing the state, she did fall on the winning side of that issue as far as how the people voted. So is she representing everybody? No. Is that opinion something that should be completely banned? I don't think that opinion should be banned, or we should be attacking her for that opinion either.
No, and you know what? I can kind of walk with you down that road a little bit. It's just when you then go and you take that throne that she has, and she tries to use that to force an agenda that, according to her, is her religiously based agenda.
Yeah, I agree. She completely jumped to the other side and became, you know, their tool. At which point she is opening herself up to criticism.
And I think that's
but
a really good problem.
I really found the initial action kind of distasteful. Throwing a gotcha question at a beauty pageant candidate.
Yeah, it is something else. The we've got to I don't know how this I hope this doesn't devolve into a much bigger problem. I think that we need to find ways to try and unite people. And this is a segment of the population that is being told they are not equal, that they are not worthy of something that we are. And I do take an issue with that.
As far as, you know, they're being told that they cannot marry.
Yeah, I think we need to do something. I don't know. I think that, you know, this is a group of people who are trying to redress their grievances, and to sit there and just kind of say, well, no. I think if you're going to say no to someone on getting the freedom to be married, then you should have to say why. And it can't just be because I said so.
Well, it goes down to whether or not you're going to recognize alternative forms of marriage. And it would, you know, let me put it this way. Kind of lost that train of thought, but let me put it this way. It has been called a violation of rights not to let people marry.
Yeah, but is it really? I mean, the thing is, it is a violation. I think it is a violation. Do people have a right to be married? I mean, I think we do.
You know, it will go to the courts, and the courts will decide. I mean, as so far, if it was an obvious violation, then it would be a slam dunk in court. As far as I understand it at this point, it looks as if the court's going to uphold Proposition 8. So maybe the winds will change on that. Perhaps it will be seen as a right. The question is what I'm trying to get at, I suppose, is whether or not recognizing alternative forms of marriage is a violation of rights, or is it not? Are we really denying people their basic civil rights by saying we're not going to recognize non-traditional forms of marriage? And I think that's something that the courts are going to have to decide.
Okay, that is a... I don't know how the courts are going to respond to it, the California issue, but I think that the California, which usually leads this country in things, is kind of behind. Is kind of behind a bit because the other states are going. What's going to happen?
How many states do we have so far that have passed legislation in support?
I believe it's five.
Is five so far, so
which means it's coming. I mean that means it's coming. It's going to push, and to think that California is not going to be one of them very, very soon. I would venture California end up being one of the top ten.
Right, or whether you see it's behind or not would matter solely on which side of the issue you fall upon.
Well, clearly I speak of I support the idea of allowing gay people to be married. I mean, I don't see why anyone really cares beyond a gay person who wants to get married. What I find really hypocritical about this issue is that if Republicans wanted to defend marriage so much, they just ban divorce. I mean, you know, I find it mildly ironic when I hear people like Rudolph Giuliani talking about we have to defend marriage. The guy who's been married, what, 5 times, including to his own cousin?
It's definitely comical when you're talking about Rudy Giuliani.
Well, it's too easy.
Let's go for what would you think as far as the issue of child adoption? Like, for example, I'm not familiar, maybe our listeners can help us out with this issue. I'm not familiar of any study that's been done as far as how children do in a family where there's a gay couple who are maybe not married, but they're together. Maybe in some states they're married. I do know that there's a lot of studies showing that children do well in a two-parent family, and children do tend to suffer somewhat in a single-parent family or in a divorce situation. So that's not to say that we have anything against single moms, to recognize that we would still prefer that children be in a family situation where they have a mom and a dad. Has there been any studies? Have there been anything? Because if you're going to give people that right, then you're not going to be able to say, well, you're not going to be able to give them lower priority. You're not going to be able to tell them that they can't.
Well, these are interesting things that do get brought up. It would be nice to have a guest who was a little more versed on the subject. And we did try to get Perez Hilton on the air today, but he apparently has better things to do.
No time for us here.
Than our show.
And maybe he's heard us rambling.
it does seem to that.
But I think what both sides tend to do is to, you know, we hear, and I've heard your criticism of the right taking the moral authority, but I think the other side tends to do that too. We're on the side of rights. If you don't agree with us, you're against rights. You know, we're on the side of, you know, being humanitarian. If you don't agree with something, you're not humanitarian. And, you know, it doesn't really benefit us when both sides are claiming the moral ground, not willing to have the discussion, and figuring that they're both right, they're both going to be sticks in the mud. Truly, there has to be some middle ground, some room for discussion on the issue.
How is there middle ground when the question is yes or no?
There's middle ground as far as there is legitimate opinions as to why it should be yes or why it should be no. If you would ask the right, they would say, well, there's absolutely no morality whatsoever in allowing this. And if you ask the other side, if you ask the hard left, there's absolutely no way anybody with any kind of conscience or that supports civil rights whatsoever could be against this. And I don't think that's true.
Well, now you're getting the political spin of both sides, and one side tries to spin one way and tries to spin the other. I get concerned when people try to instill their own personal moral compass onto everyone else around them, which is a very almost comical thing to say from behind a microphone going out to tens of thousands of people.
I think, unfortunately, that a lot of this does just get based on people's gut and people's reaction. And we do see a change. Like you said, we have the 5 states that have already. I would agree with you that California will probably follow at some point in time. So opinions do change. People's comfort level with various things change as well. But I don't think we serve the discussion well by just simply hitting people over the head.
Yeah, well, 888-228-4494 is our number, 888-228-4494. Feel free to call the show. We're going to keep throwing that number out because we got the world is on Twitter, and they're sending us replies and comments here, including Chris, who's been lost, who for the life of me I do not understand why does not just pick up the telephone and call back into the show. What we're going to do right now is
we are known for our technical difficulties.
We are known for our technical difficulties.
We wouldn't want to give that up. That's part of the show.
Well, things just happen. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to ask Seth to cue us up for a 2-minute break, and when he has that queued up, we'll go to break, and we'll get the technical issue up with Chris squared away and get her back on the air. So if he can queue that up, that would be great. In the meantime, that would be a good idea. You know what? Let's do that. We're going to go ahead to Gotta Laugh with her tweet spot. This is the second one of the day. She's doing three on every single day. 1-888-228-4494 is our number. Feel free to call in. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Welcome to my tweet. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. Let's see who's out there tweeting. Why, here's a testy little exchange now between everyone's favorite morning sickness, Joe Scarborough, and a few progressive tweeters. First, here's Joe in a series of very serious tweets.
The point is that conservatives can't hate like the left and get the same pass from the mainstream media. We have to be more strategic. I love these responses from the left. They confirm that the left thinks they are superior, and all who oppose them are stupid. Funny stuff. And yes, the far right is equally destructive and close-minded. Not a lot of grown-ups out there anymore.
Wait a minute. How'd that one get in there? It was so reasonable. Ugh. Now back to Joe's regular whiny tweets, already in progress.
How funny that the open-minded left are the angriest and most intolerant of opposing views.
The responses? Oh, there were a few of them. The following are from some of my favorite lefty, angry, intolerant tweets. Don't talk to me about blind hatred, Joe. I'm a lesbian in Florida. I feel it every day. You don't know what blind hatred is till you are a minority surrounded by armed right-wingers. Nailed it! So did this tweeter. You think we should maybe be a little more open to the idea of torture, Joe? A little more tolerant? You're forever going to frame the torture debate as a left-right thing and not a right-wrong thing. Who challenged Caters on the right exactly? When did you do a show about Phelps, Hagee, Savage, or Crowley? Joe's entire style of debate is to make judgmental assertions, accuse the left of being churlish, and rush off to his next venue. On that note, we'll call it a wrap. I'd like to keep my tweet spot. Tweet. See you later, Tweety Pies. Take it away, Jim.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio. 888-228-4494 is our number. Chris, you're back from the cornfields.
Hey,
how was Iowa?
Back.
The cornfields were great. Thanks.
Awesome. Gotta love our little technical difficulties here. I'm gonna give it a more time. 888-228-4494. If you are listening on the Ustream feed, what you are seeing is a live video feed from the studio. You are not catching some of the stuff that's going on as far as phone callers calling in or other interviews that are going on. You're catching the raw feed. If you are listening on the air through either over the air or through our getcommonsenseradio.com/feeds.html link, you are hearing the produced feed in theory and hearing what's going on here.
That's
live.
That's the polished product there.
Well, I don't know how polished it is.
Oh,
but
spin polish.
It's
polished to a beautiful shine.
Yes.
Ah, well, thank you. You were frantically sending me tweets here. that you wanted to get in on this conversation. I will spend another minute or so on it, because then I want to get on to a really good conversation. In fact, if someone could let our Twitterverse know, we're going to be having a conversation here momentarily regarding whether or not we should be legalizing recreational drugs.
Legalizing recreational drugs.
And I expect all of my pothead fans to get on the phone, 888-228-4494, and don't give me your grief, okay? Just get on the phone. I want to hear your opinions on this. It's going to be quite interesting. Let's wrap up this conversation on the gay marriage issue, Chris. You had some comments or questions or concerns about it, so...
Yeah, but I didn't. There was a part that I didn't hear. Did you guys actually say what Pat Robertson had?
No.
Did you mention what he had?
Oh, I mentioned Pat Robertson. Go for it.
Oh,
okay. What? Pat Robertson said that in the beginning, that this legalizing gay marriage basically is the beginning to the downward spiral to legalizing. Child molestation and pedophilia and bestiality. Bestiality? Are you serious? You
admit
can't
to that a lot.
To the police. Serious. You know, giving people their civil rights that is apparently, you know, guaranteed in the Constitution is now somehow akin to saying, hey, go ahead, have sex with animals, go ahead and have sex with, you know, minors.
I agree with you there, but the court has not decided that gay marriage is a civil right yet. But I agree that it is absolutely ridiculous to compare a gay couple with something as grotesque as bestiality.
It's not necessarily a civil right, but the civil right is that all men and women, obviously, are created equal. It doesn't say women, and women, you know, had several years or a century or so to gain their civil rights. Then we had blacks gaining their ability to vote, and now this is just its progression at its very basic, but this is ridiculous that we're even having a conversation. We're allowing someone who is on television and supposed to be a Christian person representing God, that he's going to say that if you give people, you know, rights to get married, that we should then decriminalize people having sex with animals? Are you kidding me?
This discussion is unfortunately nothing new. Didn't he make other ridiculous statements such as the earthquake in San Francisco and then the earthquake in Northridge were signs from God? That, I mean, the extremist viewpoint like that does us no good. It really is only divisive. And to say that an earthquake hit because of a particular population, what about all the innocent people that were there as well? It's quite ridiculous.
I couldn't agree more
that people still believe that sort of thing in this day and age.
I don't know that they actually believe it. I think that this is a political spin. It's what they love to do. They'll take something.
I think some of their followers believe it, though.
Well, they're
yeah.
Lunatics.
I was going to say he's not political. He's not political. He is strictly religious, and he has Pat Robertson. He's actually, you know, he's a religious man, and he has a huge following. Those people that follow him tend to agree with his views. If you have a person that is coming out and publicly speaking and saying, this is wrong, this is immoral, you know, these people should, you know, have basically no rights, or that, you know, essentially comparing, you know, giving them rights to condoning bestiality and polygamy and child molestation, that is absolutely ridiculously, that's intolerable. Like,
I would second you on that. I think the thing is I think that by far most of America is not religious in that sense. I mean, most people believe in God. We have several different religions, but I don't think that people really believe that type of stuff anymore, with the exception of a very few. I mean, that's so close to...
No, he has a very large following. So you can't say that, you know,
he has a large following, but I mean, if he really had all the sway in the world, we wouldn't have really had the election results that we've just seen. I think
that, but we had the election results that we saw from George Bush 1, or, yeah, George W. Bush 1 and George W. Bush 2.
But I don't think that you have most of Americans. I mean, if most Americans really truly believed that, we wouldn't see states beginning to legalize gay marriage.
But that's progression. That's the genesis.
I mean, it amazes me that that type of viewpoint still exists. I go back to in Ben Franklin's day of, you know, and we're talking early America here. We're not talking that far back, where people would actually believe that if lightning struck a house, that the fire department should allow that house to burn because, you know, God must have wanted that house to burn. And then when the lightning pole was demonstrated, it was like, oh, well, that must just be a natural phenomenon and it's easily averted. And, you know, how silly to think that that was targeted at anybody. And yet still to this day, we have people coming out claiming that natural disaster was aimed at a sect of the population by God, which I would
think
if you're a religious person, that would be very hard to believe.
And on the same token, then you also have Joe the Plumber, who was handpicked from John McCain when he was a nominee for President of the United States, that he chose that person to direct his message as the United States of America's quote-unquote everyman, and then everyman apparently is now calling gays queers, and that, you know, he would never, you know, let him or let a queer person near his children. That, to me, is just despicable, and it is something that we need to publicly say, this is not right. This man is, you know, and this public stance, it's wrong. You can't just say that about people and expect it to go unchecked. Period. End of discussion. You know, call hate on the carpet. It's an end game, as far as I'm concerned. If you don't say something against it, then implicitly implies that you are condoning it. Because silence is silent. Silence is implied consent.
We have a comment from our Twitterverse. It says, doesn't it say in the Bible, love thy neighbor? What if my neighbor is gay? So which is it, love my neighbor or condemn my neighbor? Consistency was never important for these folks.
You love the person, you hate the sin. If you want to say that homosexuality is a sin, then you love the person as a quote-unquote child of God, if you are going strictly by the Bible and Christianity. You love the person, but you hate the sin. So you can love that person, you know, Jane Smith, but hate the fact that, well, she's gay. You can't change that. No one can change anyone.
I think there's been more of a recognition in the public eye versus the media, the type of shows we watch, whatnot, that, you know, I don't really think it's viewed by the majority of people as a sin anymore. I think most people recognize that if you are gay, that's not a choice that you have.
By what standard? So, because obviously there's a large, you know, population that does believe that. So,
I don't know how you find large.
A large enough segment of the population believed that, and you portray on this your TV show that it's acceptable. Then
this is 2009, and
news advertising. I think that it's basically sure it varies area to area, but I believe it's a rather small percent of the population that just has a very loud.
This is 2009. Are you kidding me? We have gay rights, or, you know, the right to marry. In how many states?
Fine.
Not a lot.
Yes, but there's a difference between saying that we want to recognize this union as a marriage and saying that these people are sinful and it's an inch away from bestiality. There's quite a difference there. And this is what I was alluding to earlier, is that, you know, to say that you either share this opinion or you're horrible, you're with the extreme. I've seen that done in a lot of cases.
Well, it's done on both
not
sides.
Horrible,
I mean, everyone's capable
with the extreme.
Of doing that.
More like
a person who is
having sex with
not,
animals.
a supporter of gay marriage does not necessarily mean that that person believes that gays are sinners and going to hell, and that, you know, the earthquake in San Francisco was aimed at gays from God. I mean, that's quite a distance.
Right, but I didn't say that.
We're going to go ahead and close this topic up for the day.
And it's a hot topic.
It's a good topic. It is. I don't know that. I'm going to close by saying this. I think that, in no uncertain terms, Miss California needs to just do the right thing, and take that cute little crown off her head and hand it over to the next person. She needs to exit stage left. You are the weakest link, my dear. You're done. Bye bye. And it's time to understand that rules are rules. She did not follow them. She broke them, and did so in a very politically stupid manner, which is what put her on my show in the first place. She goes out there and acts like a fool. That's one thing. She acts like a fool about a political issue. It becomes another issue. I think that, she needs to kind of put an end to all this. She's going to be the next spokesperson for the right wing. With any luck, the only good thing that may come out of this is this may get Joe the Plumber the hell off my paper. And the right wing will now have another loser from which they can tramps around.
Better looking.
A much better looking one. I will freely admit that I will have a much better time looking at Carrie Prejean than I will looking at Joe
Perhaps
the Plumber.
She'll give us some gems and such and so forth then.
Oh, that was Miss South Carolina.
I think that she has a career in being a Victoria's Secret model.
I'm not even going there. I think
that's okay.
I think that it says a lot about it. We do have a question regarding Miss California. He wants to know. This gentleman wants to know if her nude photo has come out yet. No, that I'm aware of, it has not. And I'm sure that many people would like to know where that is.
I'm sure if you search the internet long and hard.
Yeah,
that's
we're not.
Somewhere.
You know, we just
not
don't need to devolve down that path. Unfortunately, when someone spews out hatred and really goes as far out of their way as she has now to spew it out and claims to be morally superior, to me it makes them kind of ugly. I don't care how pretty a girl is or how cute she is. If she's intolerant of other people and can't accept people for who they are, where do you draw the line regarding this whole thing? I mean, we don't want to allow gay marriage. I'm a disabled American. There was a time in my lifetime that I wouldn't be able to go down the street and people know that I was disabled and be able to get the same services that everyone else does. I was a class that would be
I have a child like that.
For various reasons. And I think that when we look at it overall, we need to understand that this country is made up of many shapes, sizes, types of people with different backgrounds and different stories that got us here. And we need to seriously do something to bridge this country together and stop looking for these issues to drive us apart. The fact that Karl Rove and Company uses gay marriage as a wedge issue, which is what really threw this thing on the front burner in the first place back in the 2004 election, to try and put in constitutional amendments banning gay marriage, and use as a wedge issue to divide us. And I think that there really is, it's an old cliche at this point, but there really is a lot more that unites this country than divides this country. And we can care about our fellow human, male or female, without having to marry them or without having to inject ourselves into their personal life. And I think that we need to do something about that. It's important to note that as one of my people brings up to me, that in Texas in 2003 they just struck down the anti-sodomy laws in Texas. That was 2003. I mean, that was not that long ago. I mean, why is government caring about this? Well, this is a subject that we can go on forever about, but we will then go on. We will then transition over to
marijuana.
Well, there you go. Another subject that the government has gotten itself into is
the government has good reason to be involved in this one.
Well, I agree, but it's going to be a very interesting interesting subject. The governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, said the other day that he believes it's time to have a debate on whether or not we should legalize. And I'm looking for the quote, because my understanding is he actually said recreational drugs.
Did he? I'm sorry,
pot.
I didn't get that, but it seems like we're at prohibition all over again here.
What do you mean by that? Prohibition all over again?
Prohibition as far as, remember, alcohol. And it was at one point prohibited. And people kept doing it behind the scenes. And you have to look at this issue and balance whether or not, you know, is obviously alcohol is not good for us. It's a significant problem. One could very easily make the argument, you know, you look at the amount of domestic violence, the amount of cancer, the amount of automobile accidents, the amount of issues and problems related to it. It'd be pretty easy to make an argument that this should not be allowed, that it's a harmful to the population, but it's just not realistic. So now we're kind of facing that with marijuana. We have something that is floating around in public all over the place, and yet it's not legal.
And we also have the active ingredient, the tetrahydrocannabinol. The THC.
I'm not brave like you. I'm not going to try to pronounce that.
Okay. In a pill right now, and it's regulated by the FDA. It's called Marinol.
As it should be.
So then why are we debating this?
Well, what we're debating is pretty much the street use. We have people that say they should be allowed to get it for medicinal reasons.
I'll
question that, because if something has legitimate medicinal use, you quantify that as far as a dosage. You control it as far as, you know, you need a prescription, you issue it from a pharmacy. Like, for example, I've been in an accident before. I've been pretty badly injured. I was put on morphine for that injury. They didn't hand me a pipe and say, smoke all you want. They gave me a prescription for it, a specified amount. It was a controlled substance. It was issued. And that's the way it worked. What we're having now is a situation in which we have people basically dosing this themselves. I don't see that that's really a legitimate way to treat people, to just say, you know, here are cigarettes, you smoke these till you feel better. We're not going to dose it. We're not going to worry about how much active ingredient. We're not going to – if it is truly a medicinal product, we should be dispensing it as such.
Well,
okay,
I think
but you said that – I'm sorry. You said that we shouldn't be treating it as, you know, in street use. It's not street use. The pharmaceutical agent, Marinol, is actually regulated by the FDA. So where does that argument start and end for you?
Well, when you have something that's regulated by the FDA that they said is legal, yet it's against federal law to be dispensing this, you have an issue there. You have a problem.
It's not against federal law to be dispensing anything. It's against federal law to be selling pot on the street. And the problem and the issue is that pot is stronger than what the FDA. No, it's not dispensing. Pharmacies, CVS.
I didn't see marijuana when I was at CVS.
I don't see the THC.
No, you don't. Did you need a prescription by your doctor? The doctor will write that, and then it's dispensing. If you go to your street pharmacy, that's not called dispensing. That's called selling, and they lock you up for that.
Well, plus, on another issue, where there's two different issues here. Are there active ingredients that you could dispense from a pharmacy? Yes. Is that how it's being dispensed? No.
Well, what's the active ingredients that's going to be dispensed from the pharmacy?
Well, like you said, you would put THC, if that's what's actually the ingredient that's helping people. You would measure it out in a dosage, 50 milligrams, 100 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams. You wouldn't just say, here, smoke this.
No.
As a matter of fact, there's a little bit of hypocrisy here. How can we be so anti-smoking on the one hand and wanting to stomp out Philip Morris, and on the other hand, we're saying, hey, well, we should be able to legally dispense
and marijuana for people to smoke.
I have to say something here, and that is that.
Go for it.
I come back to the name of the show. It's all common sense for a reason. We need to start with one very simple fact. Can we get off of this nonsense of medical use for marijuana? Now, I'm not saying that marijuana cannot be used for medical use.
No.
But the person who is sitting there saying, I need to go get my dime bag from my corner guy, is
That's not
eyes hurt. He's there because he wants to get high. Now,
but that's not what has been legalized across, and that's not where.
First of all, it's not legal anywhere in the country. Let's just start right there. It is against federal law to smoke pot, to possess pot, to sell pot, or to distribute pot.
Unless it is for medicinal use. No, that's not true.
Stop. There is no unless. The federal law has not changed. Every single state and every city that has said we're going to ignore state law and we're going to license this stuff is violating the law, period. So let's start there. Let's lay the facts down on the table. Now, we can debate whether or not we want to change that, and that's a fair debate to be had. But let's be realistic here. It is not currently legal in any state in the United States to smoke pot. It is against federal law, period. Pot farms have been raided by the Justice Department. What just happened about, a month ago, I guess it was.
Very recent.
Barack Obama said that he is going to now stop. He's going to suspend the Justice Department's going after this. That's not changing the law. That's merely saying we're no longer going to enforce the law, which, by the way, is an entirely different show.
That puts us in a bad spot. We're going to keep the law. We're going to say publicly we're not going to enforce it.
Now, I think there's a fair discussion to be had here. I think there's a very fair debate to be had as to whether or not we are going to allow people who are not hurting anybody to smoke pot on their own and get high. And frankly, I for one think that people should be allowed to get high. So I mean, I'll come right out there and say that.
If it doesn't hurt anybody, why don't we allow?
Well, I think that.
Why are we fighting cigarettes?
Let's go see what Paul from Missouri has to say. Paul on line one. Welcome
to
Common Sense.
Yeah. Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm cooking dinner.
Very good. No, what for you?
Well, I believe marijuana should be legalized. Not necessarily for medical reasons, but for recreational reasons. Like you were saying, I mean, if you want to be truthful about it, that's pretty much what everybody uses it for.
Right.
And
so you believe
it's just
like
alcohol. To arrest
we
people
want
and put
be able
them
to
in
have
jail.
It.
I thank you for your honesty, because that's where I'm trying to get at. That's the heart of the discussion. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
That is the heart of the discussion. It is a recreational use, and we can discuss whether or not we want to use a recreational use. Let me draw the distinction for everyone here. Okay, if you are being prescribed the active ingredient in marijuana by a physician. And that, then you went down and you purchased that in pill form. There's no problem with that. There's no issue. There's no real discussion about that, because
it is in some states.
The reality is that should not be a discussion. That's a scientific issue. And if scientists say, "Hey, this helps and this is the way you do it," then I'm all for that.
Then what's the anti argument against that?
The anti argument against what? Against whether or not people should be.
If it's a scientific, you know, valid argument to give people, unnamed people, that the privilege of going and buying a little pill capsule at the pharmacy, then, you know, where do we separate? Hey, people who want to get high from people who have a quote unquote valid reason.
I think that there's a clear line that can be drawn here. And the line is that it's a political one. The people who are truly in need of the chemicals that are in marijuana for the purpose of medicinal purposes, should be able to get a prescription and should be able to have it. And that should not even be part of the debate as to whether or not we're going to legalize pot. If doctors and scientists and people with much better education than you or I have
are going to sit here and say, hey, this is what works for these people, and the clinical trials show this, and here's the proof to back this up, and the FDA should authorize it, then this is not a discussion to be had. It's not a debate to be had. The debate that is to be had is the unfortunate couching of the desire to get high into, I have a medical need. I don't doubt that pot serves a medical need for people, and I also have said this once, I'll say it again, completely support the idea that people should be allowed to get high.
Well, let me interject something here. For example, cocaine, as far as recreational use, is completely illegal. It does have medical use, and it is used to not as well. Lots of opiates are used.
Used to be available over the counter not that long in the 40s.
Coca-Cola, did it not?
Yes, it did. That's
right. But, you know, there's a difference between, you know, going to a hospital, somebody numbing your throat with a product, and saying, I want to buy it and administer it to myself in whatever dosage I feel necessary.
We can't be straight doctors. That is just absurd. You cannot.
That's not absurd. That's
absurd
kind of the point.
No, it's not.
The debate is over legalizing marijuana for the use of medicinal purposes, not for, hey, can we then, you know, put it, Lord.
Chris, I think what you're missing is there's a line, and the line is that there is
the point is that it's medical marijuana. That's the debate. Can I go get high on my couch?
Administered opiates.
No, I don't see the debate being whether or not it can be used medicinally. I don't believe that should even be a debate. I think that if there is a true medicinal purpose that has been, you know, clinically proven and shown to be correct, but let's be honest.
It has already been proven.
As our caller Paul said,
mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. The primary people who want to use this are recreational users. Now, there is the debate that we can have as to whether or not people should be allowed to recreationally use marijuana or anything else.
Let's shift it away from the medical usage for a minute.
But that's what the bill was for, in the
non-medical community, because I think everyone would agree here that we have, you know, something is funding the underground, the drug gangs, and whatnot, and there certainly is a lot of use that is completely non-medicinal. Has that reached the point where people are basically saying we want to use this and it should not be illegal at all? Or is it still in government's best interest to say that, well, we want to suppress the use and we feel that it's a harmful as far as the health of the public? And, you know, for example, it kind of goes along the lines of should we illegalize other things?
Well, I think that let's start slicing this out and peel this onion back a little bit. It's kind of common sense to say that if you inhale anything into your lungs of chemicals, it's probably not good for you.
We're talking about the smoking aspect.
The smoking aspect of it. It's probably not good for you. The state has already saw fit to drop the hammer with tobacco because they've drawn the link to other illnesses that cost the state money. This is a serious issue. Here's where we start talking about the legitimate issues here.
And
if someone is high, they're not working.
Here you start going into the very, very slippery slope of, well, guess what? A lot of our pharmaceuticals derive their active ingredients from the poppy plant, which is what is known to make heroin.
I go back to this once again. There is a difference between a person who is recovering from glaucoma surgery and requires a active ingredient from pot to get them through that period of time in their life and an individual who feels the need to get wasted every afternoon.
No, you don't. When I was saying, okay, well, what about medical marijuana, you were saying, okay, well, what about the person who just wants to smoke pot?
Then what you're doing is you're not listening, okay? We have both said now three times, take the medical purpose off the table. I don't believe there's a debate there. I think if a doctor says this individual requires this to treat a particular illness and that person can take it through whatever means that doctor and those scientists have proven work, then that's not an issue. But that's not the issue because people don't want it because they have glaucoma. They want it because they want to get high.
But there's a difference in usage.
But they want to go to the pharmacy to get it.
Syrup is used legitimately. People boil it down and they make speed and whatnot. That's an illegitimate purpose. Hospitals use tons and tons of morphine. I wouldn't be able to put a number on it, but it's used continuously. that doesn't mean that people should be able to administer that themselves. It is a separate issue, the way I see it.
And there is a very good point being made by our Twitter feed. As you can imagine, the Twitter feeds have lit up. No pun intended.
What do we have over Twitter?
They may very well have lit up, for all I know.
well, let's hope not. They might not affect their typing ability.
Edward Virtually tells us, alcohol and nicotine are toxic. THC is not. Since the former is legal, no valid excuse for the latter not being legal as well. Now, this is a very good point, and this kind of gets to the heart of the matter, is do we as a country want to say that we want to allow recreational drug use in this country as a matter of law? Now, let's put that in the box, because let's clarify what it is that we're talking about. What we are talking about is if your people at work are getting high, then by definition their productivity is down. It's just like an alcoholic. It depends. I mean, is there a line? I mean, do we talk about alcoholism is going too far? It's saying you're drinking too much. Someone who takes has a beer after work to chill out is not going to necessarily be an alcoholic.
Right. Well, it depends on people being responsible, and of course you're going to have lapses. But
let's couch this in the responsible drug use. If we can do that, we can try to get this into that bracket.
If you could sell this to people to use recreationally and still hold them to, say, DUI rules or not operating machinery while using it, that type of thing. The way we do it with alcohol, one could argue it doesn't work very well, but it's accepted. Are we going to get to that point with marijuana where it's accepted and, you know, if there's a downside, we just have to deal with it?
I would argue it pretty much is accepted. I think that
here's the thing, though. Were it to be legalized, usage would go dramatically up.
Was that true?
I don't know
if it's true.
And just the price elasticity portion of it, it's true. If you raise the price of gasoline, even though we all need it, less is used. I mean, when the government suppresses a drug, the price goes up just on the fact that it's not widely grown. If the price is higher, if it's a little harder to get. I mean, if it was available at 7-Eleven, I don't think you could really make the argument that the usage would not go up. The social acceptability would come into play, the affordability would come into play, and I think the usage would go up. And I think that's why the government holds the stance that it does against the use.
Okay, so let's look at a couple of things that would happen.
That's why we have good.
Let's look at a couple of things that would happen. Number one, we've got there's laws of unintended consequences. We have legalization would then dramatically reduce our prison population.
Yes.
It would.
Because it's nonviolent offenders that are actually,
so,
they make
so,
up more than all of the violent offenders in given year.
In the opposition lobby, we can now put the Prison Guards Union.
They've said it would be a tax benefit.
There would be a tax benefit.
It would, and that's what I was actually going to say, is that, you know, marijuana they just found a $1 million marijuana growth lab in Miami. We're in a recession.
I don't follow what you mean by a $1 million growth lab.
There was an underground marijuana growth lab.
That they busted.
Yes.
I understand.
Okay. That they busted in Miami. And we are in a recession, and we need money big time bad. So if you have $1 million in pot and there's obviously a market, you know, the argument could obviously be made that we could, you know, parlay that into revenue.
Well, talk about your slippery slope. Well, consider this for a second. So if we do parlay that into revenue and we accept it, and then, you know, what about the following, you know, the other banned substances? Well, marijuana is one of several banned substances. What about people who want to do ecstasy? What about people who want to do powdered cocaine? I mean, one could argue that these are being suppressed for health concerns, public health safety reasons.
One could. One does.
You know,
and actually, that's the reason why.
Well, there's a couple of things coming in. As I said, the Twitterverse is just lit
probably
up here.
Probably on fire.
They are on fire.
Let's hear it.
So we're gonna try and, you know, I shouldn't. I should tell these fools to get on the phone and call in and stop this nonsense.
We'd love to hear from them.
You know, between puffs, get on the phone.
Between puffs. Stop characterizing our listeners as marijuana smokers. Come on. That is so not even right.
Oh, they know I love them. I have one gentleman who I'm not going to put his name out there for reasons that will soon become obvious. He writes that I'm embarrassed to say that pot smoking has had a direct effect on my life. I did time and never recovered fully. It ruined my life. There are, and I read this one because there are real people here that are being affected. Now, the hard-ass answer on this is to say, well, you knew it was illegal when you did it.
Right.
And you chose to do it anyway. And you got caught. And, oh, well. But is it really, oh, well?
If you are saying that to a person who has terminal cancer or any of the neuromuscular diseases.
Get off of the medical.
No. Why? Why should I divorce myself from that?
Because we're talking
what
about
if he
recreational
is?
Drug use.
To say that the billions and billions of dollars of this stuff that's being sold is all for medical, I think is
you can't divorce.
You have for the purpose of the conversation. Can you find a way to do it?
I sure can, but
Because what we are talking about is not people who are trying to who need medicinal use of whatever drug it is. I don't care. There should not be a discussion about that. I've said this already. If they are under doctor's orders for it, there should be no discussion. It should be legally allowed to be prescribed in any manner in which the doctor sees fit.
Period. Then why is that not the policy for all 50 states?
Well, first of all, it's not the policy for any state.
Doctors have plenty of leeway as far as prescribing. They're even allowed to prescribe what's called off-label, where they take a drug and they prescribe
it to
the patient, and that's not in the intent of that drug. I say it again. I don't see giving people a bag of marijuana as a prescription. You get people prescription
but
has a
there
condition.
Is.
Yes,
absolutely, a medication. So. You can't divorce yourself from, you know, with the argument that and completely ignore one aspect of it, which is the reality of the fact that we have a pharmaceutical medication that can be readily dispensed, written by a doctor. I can go to my doctor tomorrow if I have cancer, thank God.
This should not be a discussion when it comes to pot.
But it is. You know why? Because it's not legal in all 50 states. You just don't know.
Okay. Well, I've already said this should not be a discussion because it should be legal to prescribe in pill form in a specific dosage, take this many times per day, and however the doctor sees fit, that's fine. Okay? So from this moment forward, let us talk about the other thing. I have a question from Ponies. Who says, does the federal government have the authority to regulate pot? Yes, they do through the Food and Drug Administration. And they have, which is why it is not federally illegal in any state in the country. Now, we can have other discussions. Tom Hensel sends in a thing that says that one of the adverse effects of legalizing pot is not to mention the boost in Dorito sales. That is,
this could be doubly good for the economy.
That is classic.
A good comment, good comment.
That is classic. So, the getting on the issue of legalization of the recreational side of this, we have some very good points that are coming in here. It is Hippie Randall. That's a frequent Twitter here. he says, "Hey, just because my name is Hippie doesn't mean I'm a drug user." But then he tells us that tons more lives have been adversely affected by alcohol over DUI. Now, he puts that as a question mark, so I'm not sure if he's making that as a statement or...
alcohol over DUI?
In other words, tons more lives have been adversely affected by alcohol.
So if alcohol was worse, that wouldn't really be an argument for...
Well, I don't know if he's asking the question as to whether or not one... in other words, does pot do more damage than a DUI, for example, if you were high... And smoking. I tell you this, if you smoke a joint, you get busted, you're toast.
Well, you're...
Absolutely.
Even if it's legal, I would assume, just like with prescription drugs, that you can still be DUI, driving under the influence substances other than alcohol.
I'm going to tell my my fans here something that they probably did not know.
You smoked pot?
No. Actually, I've never even tried it. However... if you are pulled over in many states in this country, if you are pulled over for driving erratically or for a potential DUI, and you breathe and you do take the breath test, and you've passed the breath test but fail the physical test, and they bring you down to the police station and draw blood, any amount of any substance is an automatic DUI pop. You're done. So it is regardless. You the level actually goes higher as far as your threat level when it comes to that. So there's a heads up for you. So just think about that for a moment. Now, there is a question as to whether or not pot has done more damage. Now, here's an interesting question that I would throw back. Is the reason that pot has done less damage than say alcohol because it's been illegal and not readily accessible, and as a result has been more difficult to get, anyone would admit, than alcohol. Now, I'm sure in some areas that's not true. I'm sure in some areas you can get pot just wherever the hell you want to. But let's be realistic here. There has been a stigma with pot that if you got busted, you go to jail. As a result, there's a deterrent effect to a percentage of the population. So that is a question to think that one, you know, one doesn't generally doesn't go to the other. Gene Douglas sends us a thing saying potheads don't cause bar fights. Now, I will tell you this.
Yep.
That is probably true. However, I have never gotten a more vicious reaction on my Twitter feed than when I post something up there that appeared to be adversely of an adverse opinion toward legalizing pot.
Interesting.
And I did it for the purpose of...
Because people want to defend it.
Well, let me jump to the other side for a second. I've been on the anti-pot bandwagon here for a second because I felt that some of the arguments were kind of disingenuous. But then again, there's also the other side. There's the government's reefer madness argument, which is really an exaggeration the other way. And there are places in Europe, I believe it's Amsterdam, where it's been legal for quite some time, and it hasn't caused their society to unravel. So that's what I would point
America.
To if I wanted to make the other argument. Now, to all of this, all of these comments that it's not harmful, I mean, I think smoking in and of itself is a harmful carcinogenic, you know, act, regardless of whether or not you're talking nicotine, THC. THC in and of itself, from my understanding, I don't think there's a lot of correlation to any damage with that. But smoking, you really can't make that argument. But if I were to argue for the other side, I would say, hey, you know, it's a freedom issue. It is available in other parts of the world. We're funding organized crime by keeping it illegal. And that, you know, to as much of an extent as possible, people should have what they want.
And that's you know, kind of where I come down. I come down.
People should have. Good.
I come down on this. I think that you know, the state to say you're not allowed to do this.
You guys are missing the point in the worst way. And I just have to say it. Like, the point is, marijuana should be legalized for the sake of the... There are patients with cancer... especially metastatic bone cancer. No, I understand that you're going to say you're going to be upset about that. But listen, this is why it should be legalized. You have to have a foot in the door. You have to have a foot in the door to legalize it. You have to have a reason. And the reason is that it puts people out of pain. Whether you're going to sit on the couch...
It puts people out of pain with opiates
and
every hospital in America, that does not mean that we've legalized opiates for recreational use, for snorting, for smoking, for various uses.
Au contraire, because people are prescribed Percocet for years.
Prescribed painkillers, people are not handed a crack pipe and told to smoke as much as you want until you feel better.
Rush Limbaugh got in trouble for abusing prescription drugs. The opiates were legal. His possession of them were not. Your argument is garbage. Okay, and you keep coming back with the same exact argument. It's garbage because we have set aside from this discussion the people who want to use it for medical purposes. Now, you want to keep trying to wring that back in. Let's talk about my 16-year-old son. My 16-year-old son wants to smoke pot and get high. Should he be legally allowed to do it? Yes or no?
That's
the question.
That's the argument.
Okay, my argument, my response is very simple. And that is that in order for the government to step in and say, hey, you are not allowed to do this, I think they should have to show some type of negative reaction to the public. It's some type of governmental interest as to why they should do it. And therefore, I think that they should have to prove why we should not do something, as opposed to people in a free society having to prove why something should be legal. In that regard, now I have to read Aphrodite's comment here. She says, "Potheads always get vicious when they run out of Cheetos."
Break for humor.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I think that where I come down on this issue is very straightforward, and that is that I think that that barring there being proven a public interest in banning it, it should be legal.
Well, let me throw a question out there, because I'd like to hear from the supporters. Would you honestly say that being a regular user, and I'm not talking about somebody who's retired, who's sick, being a regular user does not have a health impact, does not have an impact on ability to operate machinery, including automobiles, does not have an academic impact on somebody's ability to concentrate, to study, to be a fully active member of society?
Well, I think they call them potheads for a reason.
I mean, I think
you look at Jerry Garcia, you don't think bright bulb.
There's a term out there, burnt.
Yes.
And I think it's recognizable. And to say that this is harmless is not a fair argument. If you want to argue for it, I believe that there are fair arguments. But I believe that saying that this is harmless and it's all government boogeyman is also not an honest argument.
Well, I think that there's a lot of just disingenuous arguments running around here, because I'll tell you, as soon as the state of California legalized marijuana, the Center for Disease Control did not realize there was that many glaucoma cases going on in California. I mean, the amount of people who suddenly couldn't see and had trembling nerves,
people
and
in jail,
it was unbelievable. Tom sends us a thing that says, There doesn't need to be a reason to legalize it, only to ban it. That's kind of my position, is that I don't think we should have
agree. We should not have a ban without legitimate reason.
And you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger wanted a debate, and we're having one.
I could argue the complete opposite side of this as far as why we should, legalize drugs, but I haven't, because I'm in the medical field, so.
I'm not saying that I'm not even opposing whether or not we should legalize drugs. I think that it's an issue that should be up for debate. Generally speaking, I am of the belief that what an individual does in their home that does not adversely affect some other human being, just in the privacy of your own home, is none of our business. I think that too many people out there are trying to legislate morality with their own morals, and therefore essentially control other people because of what their own personal beliefs are. You don't want to smoke pot. Don't.
But then why would we bring up cocaine and ecstasy? I don't get that.
I think that we in this particular argument, although I agree with the crux of your opinion there, that we see a lot of grandstanding, we see a lot of people trying to impose morality. I don't think you could really make the argument that somebody can do this and it only affects themselves. When you're talking about alcohol use, drug use, it affects us as a whole. And that's why we need to have discussion.
Even the very fact that you would completely, no. The fact that we would entertain the idea that we should legalize drugs, and the fact that they are things that kill thousands of people every single day, plenty of drugs every year. No, yes, we have legalized plenty of drugs,
and they do have adverse side effects. So it's a balance. It's not an adverse side effect.
No, it's not an adverse side effect. Yes,
so drugs don't have a side effect.
Potentially be, but you introduced ecstasy and cocaine and all of them. It's not an adverse side effect. It's a known effect.
We have a guest on the phone.
Eric from showmethefacts.org is on line two, who I'm sure is going to provide a little more insight into this and hopefully with a little more knowing what the heck we're talking about. So, Eric, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I just came across your link through Twitter, and I thought I'd chime in. First off, I think we need to clear something up. You guys keep going back and, you know, saying marijuana and then comparing it to alcohol, comparing it to cocaine, ecstasy. If we're going to be completely, you know, honest with comparison, marijuana is more of a very effective vitamin than it is a very safe drug. If you had a deficiency in vitamin C, you would take a supplement. If you had a deficiency in a certain hormone, you would take a supplement. Well, most of your bodily functions are controlled by endocannabinoids. They control everything from liver functions to immune system to all these different things. And guess what? Marijuana is full of cannabinoids. It helps to supplement people that have a deficiency. For example, persons with ADHD, they have a deficiency in cannabinoids, which help the synapse connections in the brain. Raising cannabinoids have shown to increase focus. It's not magic. It's just chemistry.
Now, I have to say, as a layman on this subject, I describe people who are smoking marijuana in many ways, but focused is not a word that really strikes me as
vitamin deficiency.
Well, that depends. It depends who you're looking at. If you're going to look at someone who's taking an indica, for example, then yeah, indica is a strain or a sub-strain of cannabis that will lead to a more relaxed, more laid-back motion. It's also used for pain tolerance or keeping pain down. There's other strains known as sativa, though, that provide an uplifting focus, almost like a caffeine effect. Again, there's plenty of studies, you can find them on my website, that show that sativa strains are actually a very efficient, very natural, very safe alternative to methylphenidate, otherwise known as Ritalin. But that is why...
Absolutely. Well,
would we want to put everybody on Ritalin?
Well, no. But here's the question. I think, and he's bringing up some very fair points up here, and I think this is exactly what we wanted to do, was have the debate. The question I would have is, you seem to be talking about medicinal purposes for marijuana, and what would be the harm if it was legalized in saying, well, we're not going to let you smoke it, we're going to give you its effective ingredients, whatever those are, in a pill form, X amount of milligrams this time per day, prescribed by a doctor. Would that not be better than, well, I think, you know, one bag ought to do it? I've never heard of any type of...
It depends on your definition. I mean, it really depends. We become a society that's so dependent on a doctor giving us a prescription. I mean, that's great, but we got to remember, thousands of years prior to white coat drug dealers telling us which things to take and which things not to take, people had to find it out for themselves. So a better question to ask is, what is the harm of someone, in your words, using a bag to help themselves?
There is no
toxicity level that someone can use. I mean, it's a completely safe substance. If you want to argue that it should become in pill form, well, what's the difference between a pill and an organic piece of plant? I mean, I'm not saying people should smoke it. Of course, there's adverse side effects to smoking anything, but that's why there's vaporization, there's edibles, there's oils.
Okay, first of all, pesticides are organic. Rat poison is organic. Gasoline is organic. To say that this is organic, it grows in a plant, it cannot be harmful.
Let me cut you short. Secondly, I understand that a lot of natural things are dangerous. I understand that
everything has a side effect. Aspirin has a side effect. If something is a drug that affects your body system, it is not that well targeted. If you take some vitamins in excess,
so then why would you argue for it in the beginning?
You want to give me a second to respond here? The thing you're missing is that people always seem to do that. Oh, some natural things can kill you. Well, no one is claiming that everything natural is safe. All we're saying is that the science is showing us that marijuana is safe. I'm not claiming it's safe because I believe it's safe. I'm claiming it's safe because the alternative doesn't show that it's harmful. So if you're asking me, well, is it safe to smoke this thing I found on the side of a tree? I don't know. Let's do some science and find out. Is it safe to take too many vitamins? Well, no. Science will say no, it doesn't. When it comes to marijuana, it's not the same. Studies show that it is safe. Studies show you cannot overdose from it. Studies show it does not have any long-term lasting effects on the brain or cognitive ability. So when you're asking me all these questions, it's almost like you're not even bothering to read the facts.
No. There's plenty of evidence to the contrary of that. There are people that abuse it. I've seen this happen to people.
Then why would we have?
You just told me that you're trusting.
There is legitimacy to why it is illegal. It is not an absolute.
Then why would we have it on the streets? And why would you argue to have it on the streets?
Well, actually, what I'm arguing for is that people should be allowed to do it if they want to. That's my position is they should be allowed to do it. However, to simultaneously sit, because I think if somebody wants to sit there and draw on their arm with the magic marker, they should be allowed to do it. Well, it doesn't mean it's a smart thing to do. I generally support freedom. I generally support people's freedom to make decisions for themselves. The concern that I have here is that when we talk about having a debate, we start couching this thing I completely admit to being.
Freedom. The freedom argument does not work, because if you're going to say, well, I think that you should be able to smoke pot on the corner in the, couched in the argument of, well, it's freedom, then, well, I could argue that I support the idea that we should be able to say, kill our ex-husbands that we don't like. It's not based.
No, because that's hurting. First of all, I've come out supporting.
It's not based in science.
I have come out supporting the use and freedom of people doing what they want to do, and you are attacking that position. I came out against trying to split the difference between the medical use and the recreational use, and you came out against that position. I think you need to figure out what position you want first, and then take it, because I am saying that I do think that people should be allowed to do it. The concern that I have and the problem that I have is the spin that takes place around this medicinal use part, because the reality is the majority of people that want to use this are not using it for medicinal purposes. That's just plain simple truth.
And for you to judge that.
I'm not judging that. What I'm saying is they should have the right not to.
Okay.
So I'm not judging that. I'm agreeing that they should have the right to do that. However, politically, and that's my world, is the politics of it. You lose the argument. It's the same thing as the NRA saying duck hunters need to hunt ducks with AK-47s. They sound ridiculous when they make the argument. When someone sits here and tells me that there is no proof at all that smoking pot chronically does anything to your brain, yet they have the term potheads to specifically describe someone who's flipping wasted out of his mind and can't hold a coherent thought, politically, whether or not the science backs it up, politically, it creates a problem.
But politically, who has said that?
Who said what?
Who has said that, we can't have potheads? Because the debate originally was about the medicinal use of medical marijuana.
No, this conversation has never been about medicinal use of marijuana. This conversation has been about Governor Schwarzenegger saying that he wanted to have a discussion about a debate about recreational drug use, not medicinal drug use.
About recreational?
You've been off on this medicinal thing since we started the conversation, but that's why we kept trying to come back. This is about a discussion about whether or not we should permit it. Now, I believe that people like Eric, who clearly have a handle on the situation, can provide insight to other uses for it. My concern here is this something, and maybe this is a debate that needs to be had over the long term, that the that we want to be regulating. Do we want to get in? Now, right now, the situation in California is that they're going bankrupt. So they see a $1.3 billion aid to their budget if they legalize marijuana. You don't tell me that many people are using it because they have pain or the shakes. They want to use it recreationally. My argument is fair enough. Let's just say that. And then let's have the debate based on that. Don't try to pigeonhole me by saying I'm taking some of the glaucoma medication. You talk about the issue. I personally believe that if I want to get high, I should be able to get high, so long as I'm not endangering someone else. I think that is where we need to couch this debate. When we start talking about
about oh, it's all for drug use. It's obviously garbage argument because I mean, all for medicinal use. It's a garbage argument because it's not all for medicinal use, and we damn well know it. And we should stop acting like it. If you want to engage in a political debate, engage in a political debate based on the merits of your argument. Now, our caller, and thank you very much for calling, by the way. What our caller was just saying was that there are very legitimate purposes and medicinal uses for the drug. I agree, and I've already conceded that point. And I'm not here to oppose.
Again, I'm not focusing just on medical, for the record. I'm basically trying to broaden the spectrum of the word medical. I'm not. It's no more medical to me than drinking green tea or having a caffeine beverage to try to help yourself get through the night of, you know, working mm-hmm. on an exam. I mean, it's just one of those things where people have gotten to the point where they say medicine, and like you a moment ago said, I mentioned glaucoma. Does it work great with glaucoma? Of course it does. But it also works great just for your everyday person who would like to relax safely. It works great for someone who might want to just enjoy the relaxing effects of marijuana. And until it's shown that it causes harm, which, again, there's plenty of groups that are trying to prove that.
It has been shown that. This is where I take issue.
Mike has a problem here. Mike says it has
very
been
much has been shown that there's harm. To say that there is absolutely no harm to this particular thing and that it's not
then
even a
why
drug,
would
it's like
you
green
argue
tea.
For it?
No, stop
short...
saying that, Mike. Mike, stop exactly. saying that unless you're going to show
there
me.
Are,
that
oh,
I'm pretty
please.
Well
there are short-term
different.
Effects. There's distorted perception. There's effects on your ability
during the
to
time
think.
Of the drug in your system, there are.
Your heart
it depends
rate.
On the amount,
and then
too.
The number two killer in the United States, cancer, smoking is related to cancer, and you can't say because you're smoking marijuana as opposed to smoking cloves or smoking tobacco that it's
time,
not going to be
Mike,
a carcinogen.
Mike,
that is
Mike,
absolutely false.
Mike, I got to cut you off. The biggest study of its kind, even reported on Fox News, one of the biggest conservative networks out there, the biggest
and
study
we rely
of its
on
kind.
Fox News.
Hold on, let me finish.
Don't interrupt me. The biggest study of its kind proved definitively that you are no more likely to get lung cancer from smoking marijuana than you would from smoking nothing at all. I'd be happy to send you that research. I can't pull it up now just on the fly. But the thing is that the cannabinoids in marijuana have shown to have an anti-cancer effect, which might be why, even though, yes, there are more carcinogens inside of a marijuana cigarette than there are in a tobacco cigarette, it doesn't matter because that's what separates science from anecdotal myths. Science shows that it does not increase the likelihood of cancer.
We have completely left common sense if we're
going
to say that. Smoking
versus
not smoking does not cause cancer. I mean, my proximity to the 405 freeway, my proximity to fire, my proximity to dust can cause cancer. If I'm smoking a product, I'm putting myself at a far, far greater cancer risk. And to say otherwise
is completely
disingenuous. And to state studies that don't exist saying that smoking is not carcinogenic is a complete disservice to the health of the American people.
According to the Center,
this up?
According to the Center for the Center for Disease Control, long-term effects of marijuana use include enhanced cancer risk, decrease in testosterone levels and lower sperm count for men, increase in testosterone levels for women, and an increased risk of infertility, diminished extinguished sexual pleasure, that's great, and psychological dependence requiring more of the drug
Sorry,
to get
Jim.
The same effect.
And again, are you reading this off the NIDA website, or are you actually trying to look for answers yourself? Because most things you're describing, especially the cancer part,
here.
And I want to send it right now through Twitter. If you'll follow the link through Twitter, again, it's the biggest study of its kind, and it shows that what you're saying is an irrational fear. There
yep,
is no risk
absolutely.
Of increased cancer.
So you guys
I
are both trying
you.
To end that.
I agree with you.
Fear and the American Lung Association. It is completely wrong. They're in the tank.
No, not that they're wrong.
Oh, they're not wrong, so then they're right, that smoking is carcinogenic and is a threat to your lungs.
Wait.
Smoke
wrong versus
smoking
right?
Tobacco.
No, wrong versus right does not necessarily mean arbitrarily
facts.
Lying to you. Sometimes it can be misleading or accidental, but that's okay. Well, you know, the marijuana policy project, they have to go and kind of disengage from all of the facts that are arbitrarily out there Because, I think we absolutely do have that idea in our head that, oh, pothead is this and pothead is that, and pothead is going to go screw up absolutely everything and sit on the couch every single day and never do a damn thing. And that's not true.
Yes, but then on the other hand, you're telling me that there's no side effects, that it is not cancer, it is not carcinogenic, and I think somebody would really
do
that. I'm
not saying that at all. It is carcinogenic, but if you are prescribing pot for a person, who do you think that you are going – well, I'm sorry. Okay.
If you were prescribing it, you would not be having them smoke it.
I'm, you know what? Hey, you know what? If I was a doctor,
again,
I knew it. But
like,
here's the thing.
No
my
point
patients
to pick up a pipe
would
and smoke it.
No.
I knew this was going to be a hot topic. Guys, stop. It's going to be a hot topic. But I really did not think this is going to be this big of a hot topic in this room.
I need to say one thing because I'm going to die. It's cancer patients. You are depriving cancer patients and people with neuromuscular diseases. I don't give a crap about the occasional casual. I don't care about the occasional casual pot smoker. I care about the terminal patients and whether it's medicinal or they have to go get it from the corner, you know, drug salesman, that's fine with me. They can die without being in pain. End of subject.
And there are plenty other alternatives that they could be legally prescribed.
What are they? And what are they? Because
they're in pain? Painkillers?
Yeah.
There are drugs to increase appetite. I'm not a library of different pharmaceuticals,
right.
But I know that they exist. Know people who have been cancer patients and they have not been prescribed marijuana. They've been on
and
chemo-
there are different kinds
drugs,
of
legitimate
patients. Trust me, I know it.
And for you to sit here and say that we need to stop people suffering by giving them something that is tremendously carcinogenic to the point or beyond of what cigarettes are is really a bad argument.
You know what I think you guys
really?
Need?
Is
you guys need to say, hey, relax.
If you,
relax.
No. If you want to go argue with pancreatic cancer, go look up the fact or go look up the
American Lung Association's website. Go to any legitimate drug abuse website and
no,
they
go
would
look
not,
up
they're not going to be
pancreatic cancer. Go look up metastatic cancer. Go look up the fact that some cancers are completely terminal in and of themselves by their very definition of cancer with their area. Yes, if I went and got leukemia or, you know, Hodgkin's or whatever, okay, I have a really good chance of recovering. And I'm not going to worry about marijuana because I know that my doctor's going to treat me well. If I'm going to freaking die, do you think that anyone in the whole entire free world should ever wonder about, oh my God, what if she turned into a pothead? No. Absolutely not. That's absurd, and it is irrelevant, and there should be a standard between medical relevance and, oh, your occasional pothead. Because if I'm a cancer patient and I'm going to die, I'm not going to be driving your train. Sorry.
Oh, a little glitch, as you were saying. We were discussing whether or not it should be legalized as the governor proposed that we have a discussion.
Okay. The discussion here needs to be whether or not we should allow people, regardless of the risks.
to do it. I personally believe that we should allow people to be on. We have Michael from Vancouver who is currently on. Mike Vancouver, go ahead. Michael Vancouver?
Hello?
Oh, you do not? Yes, there you are.
There he is.
Hello?
Mike, on the air, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm having problems with the line, but the reason I called in, I was getting so upset with whoever that guy is that you're talking to that's spouting all this disinformation about marijuana and cancer. It's
Mike.
Absolutely.
His name is Mike.
Rubbish.
Absolutely.
If we're going to talk about pot as
marijuana
a drug...
Marijuana cigarettes have no carbon monoxide, no carcinogens when you burn a marijuana cigarette. You've been smoking a little bit too much in your own pot, guys.
If we're going to talk about it as a drug, then where's the outcry over the deaths from legal drugs in America of 750,000 a year? But you never see that on the news because the drug companies spend $4 billion... to suppress
yep.
that information.
Au contraire, it's been in the news quite a bit, problems with
really?
Prescription
then
drugs.
Where is it? Then where is it? And why have you
where
not brought
is
it?
It up?
Okay.
Why have you not brought it up?
You're fantastic. You're anti-drug and pro-drug at the same time.
To marijuana and lung disease, the worst effect they found is mild bronchitis. That was conducted by the British Medical Association.
Yeah, you don't.
Okay. Marijuana is the biggest cash crop in California. There are numerous small places in California that...
I'm offended that people would lie like this in support of it. I wanted an honest discussion with people who believe in it. But to say that it is non-carcinogenic, that smoking is non-carcinogenic, you guys are really going to be in trouble here if we legalize this, because then a company is going to produce it, and then you won't be able to call them the big bad company anymore.
Well, it's purely absurd. Excuse me. I've listened to 40 years of this crap, okay? I had a pulmonary exam of my lungs 2 years ago, and they're perfectly clear. I'm 58 years old. I smoked marijuana on and off since I was 18 years old, so I don't want to hear this bull crap, okay? Do you smoke?
I know people who have smoked tobacco cigarettes all their life. This is what a comedian uses, a comedian like Dennis Leary, to support it. That, oh, this has had no effect. I smoke every day. It does have an effect. If you and me start running flights of stairs, I'm going to kill you because you smoke every day. That doesn't mean that it has to cause...
Because you're not going to die. That's why. Because you are not
going
to die.
You're not
going to
die.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Medical use of marijuana, and I know that the show has divorced itself from the medical marijuana debate, but if you are going to die, yeah, exactly, I can't help myself.
Okay, for the 2 billionth time, can we agree that if a doctor prescribes pot, you can have it? I don't care how much you want, you can have it.
Then what doctor is going to prescribe it if you're not going to die? What, you're going to go to your doctor and say, hey, listen, I just want to get high. What doctor's going to go and say, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. Here's the
prescription. That's the argument. What? That's the question you're not listening to.
Oh, that's a joke.
The entire thing. Should an American be allowed to get high just because he wants to get high? That's not it, though.
Stop screaming at me. That is not it. If I go to my doctor and he says, I say, listen, I just want to go get high, prescribe it for me, you know, if he does or if he doesn't, that's not going to answer your question of, hey, can I just smoke it? Because
we're going to, this conversation's about to come to an end, okay? I'm done. Because you're having an argument screaming about medicinal, and I don't give a damn about medicinal. We're not talking about medicinal. We haven't been talking about medicinal. You keep trying to talk about medicinal. I'm talking about the 23-year-old college kid who wants to smoke a bong because he wants to flip and get high. And shouldn't be allowed to do it.
Where is that in the news?
I don't care about the medicinal use about it. I care if should Rush Limbaugh have been prosecuted for abusing a personal abusing medication. Should he have been? Or should he have been?
That's a whole entire nother.
No. That's the debate we've been having for an hour. You've been off on some other party somewhere.
Oh my
Because the conversation has been all along whether or not people should have the right to get high on their own. First, we have to do is understand that that's the argument we're having. It's not whether or not someone should be allowed to do it through medicinal purposes. It's about whether or not they should just be able to do it, period, without having to provide a reason. My position is they probably should be, and that's what I've been arguing. However, we managed to get in these arguments, these fights, because we keep trying to change the subject, which is usually what happens when someone who is losing a fight against something, and instead of realizing that you are supporting the same thing I'm supporting, you keep trying to argue it by throwing out the medicinal thing. No one's arguing the medicinal thing. This is like saying, should I be allowed to murder people? Well, if someone's got a gun to your head, I should be allowed to murder the person who's got a gun to your head. Does that mean I should allow everyone to murder people? Of course not. So, yes, there are certain circumstances when regardless, they should be allowed to do things. I agree with that. However, the reality is that that's not the discussion that we're having. The discussion we're having is whether or not someone should be allowed to do it carte blanche as they wish. Now, this has been a great argument, folks. It's been a great argument, a wonderful debate, a very heated debate, and I do appreciate that. I do appreciate the callers. But we do need to understand something, and that is that there's a lot of misinformation going out there about marijuana use on both sides. We cannot act as if there is not misinformation out there. If people will choose to get involved and make educated decisions about whether or not what we want to do going forward, then we can do it. We need to know what is going on. We need to understand what the risks are and what the benefits are to doing it. And that is the debate to be had. The problem that we cannot get ourselves into is we cannot get ourselves into debating an issue without facts on the table. I freely admit to not having all the facts. Okay? My argument has been all along that I don't even think the facts come into play in that I generally believe that people should be allowed to do it. However, there is a debate raging in this country, and it's raging in your Congress right now. It's raging in your state houses right now. It's raging in your Senate. It's raging in schools as to whether or not this should be legalized across the country. And we need to understand that this is a debate that should be had. It can be had. But we should all educate ourselves on the system and be able to – and we should also be able to talk to each other and respect each other's views on the position. So with that said, we're gonna close the book on this subject for the day. Thank you very much to the callers who chose to call in. I wish that you guys would have, more of you tweeters would have called in, because it would have been great to have this ongoing discussion. It really was fun. We're going to go to Gotta Laugh with her tweet spot.
Welcome to my tweet. Don't get your hopes up. It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. Anyone up for some random tweets? Sort of a tweet medley? A tweet goulash, if you will. Here we go. Here's one from one of Twitter's resident comedians, Stu Baker. Obama to name a Supreme Court justice who combines empathy and understanding to replace Souter. Naturally, this rules out a man. Oh, Stu, you scamp. Bloggers like myself, only, you know, really well-known, are all over Twitter like flies on Glenn Beck. Take Marcos Moulitsis of Daily Kos, for example, who says, I've been on Twitter for 6 weeks, and it's loads of fun, but it's kind of sad that conservatives think this will help bring them back to power. Here's one from Tom Tomorrow about Boss Limbaugh. Rush often says, I choose not to participate in the recession. Many people are losing jobs to provide this choice. The ever-popular Lee Stranahan popped in with John Edwards news. I've heard from two different sources that a campaign aide walked in on John Edwards and Riel Hunter taking a shower together. Here's another I've never mentioned before about that picture of the baby that Elizabeth and John Edwards claimed to be confused about.
Fred Barron told me that was the baby, but that the picture was months old and John hadn't worn the shirt in a while. Fred Barron was a Democratic fundraiser who was paying for Riel's Santa Barbara home. He passed away a few months ago. Some random tweeter randomly said, "I wouldn't let Joe the plumber anywhere near my toilet." And finally, someone who quoted Bill Maher, "Arlen Specter crossed the aisle to be closer to the bathroom." I wonder if that tweeter meant to include David Vitter, man of all diapers. Anyway, on that note, we'll call it a wrap. I'd like to keep my tweet spot. Tweet. See you later, Tweety Pies. Take it away, Jim.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
This has been Common Sense, our second show. Greatly appreciate everyone for being on board. Thank you on behalf of Chris and Mike and everyone that called up. We greatly appreciate it. It was a very spirited discussion. It was a lot of fun. Got to do this more often. We will be here next Friday, like every Friday, at 3:55 p.m. if you're on the internet feed, 3:55 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, 3:55 p.m. Pacific, 6:55 p.m. Eastern, and remember to call in. You can always get us on Twitter, at Jim Alger. That's the at sign, and then Jim Alger at Twitter. And thank you very much for everyone who showed up, and have a great day, and keep it real.